All right, we're going to have Michael Hoffman on with us for the next 2 hours. He's been gracious enough to move back 20 minutes because of the Palfrey murder. He'll be with us 20 minutes into overdrive. I want to take our time here today and attempt to not throw in my points and added things and back up what he's saying, but really riveting, important information to understand the world we live in and how the nature of reality has been hidden from us, and false images and false maps have been downloaded into our minds. He is an alternative historian, award-winning, a former AP writer based in New York. He's written some books that have been bestsellers, very well received, and we're going to break down a whole host of issues, the cornucopia. I want to start at the beginning today and go back to the roots of this, go through it all with our guest today. Thank you for coming on with us, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Alex.
This is a short segment. We'll come back in a long one, but just begin wherever you like, whatever you think's most important. If you were talking to a new audience, which most of my listeners are for you, and trying to explain it to a informed population, but also people that may not have a full understanding.
Well, I think I'd like to go back to what we discussed last time. You raised an issue, and then I heard a commercial on the program that set off something in my mind. And you mentioned, you said, where is it? Who's responsible? Where do we trace this cryptocracy, this conspiracy up to the top? And you said, is it a German conspiracy? And then there was an add-on saying that we were headed to a papal America, that whenever church and state are united, that brings about tyranny.
Is it a Zionist? Is it a,
yeah. Yeah, when I hear that, I realize that there's more confusion out there than I even realized, because I think we have to follow a trail in the West, and what my remarks today will be about Western civilization, the cryptocracy as it operates in the West.
Now, I want to be clear. I want to stop you, though. I don't have confusion about this. We're all broken, though, into subgroups fighting over which group runs it, with most of our collective energies in the movement spent on that. I don't do that. You don't do that. I understand it's a methodology that infects all the major groups, but with some core groups operating. I just want to be clear for the audience.
Well, you know, I see that when we're trying to find a way of ameliorating the cancer plague, and one of the ways that the system keeps us from doing that is they plant the idea that everything causes cancer, so why bother? When we're dealing with the assassination of President Kennedy and we're trying to bring the criminal masterminds who were behind that to justice, one of the ways they obstruct us is they plant the idea that everybody killed Kennedy. It was the communists, it was the anti-communists, it was the CIA, it was the KGB. So when we have these agents of confusion sowing this, some of it is honest confusion, of course. Not everyone is an agent. But when the agents of disinformation or confusion are out there, we can't begin to proceed from first principles. And I find so many people are in difficulty because they're not proceeding from first principles. So for me, the first principle is...
Or let me just add before we go into this, or there are people deliberately putting out this info, like some of the Catholics run it all crowd. They demand that I have on their grand poobah, but I've researched what he says. It's just made up. He believes that Rosicrucians use magic to drop A-bombs. He believes the Earth is on a string and that the universe orbits it. I mean, these people, some of them are so kooky, but they demand that you agree with them. And so I just want to be clear that I don't agree with a lot of the groups that are out there saying this group or that group runs it all. That's my point.
I see. Well, and by the way, who are you referring to when you say the grand poobah of the Catholics?
Well, no, of the Catholics run it all crowd. I don't even want to say his name. It's just, I don't even think most of his minions know that he believes all this insanity.
Right, because one of the things I noticed in the ad is they said they created a proprietary relationship between church and state and the papacy, and actually the United States of America was formed in revolt against an Anglican church and state, which had united in Great Britain.
Well, let's be clear. I don't endorse the ads on this network unless you hear my voice endorsing it. I have no control over that. But go ahead.
Well, and so, I mean, just very briefly, the Anglicans were operating a union between church and state. And one of the reasons I know that is when I was researching the biography of the first Roman Catholic Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Roger B. Taney, And he talked about when he was a child, he was banned from going to Catholic school. He was born just slightly before the onset of the American Revolution. And once the American Revolution was a success, almost immediately, his parents were allowed to send him to the school of his choice. So it's just one example of the anomalies of history, and either we're
stay
accurate.
There, stay there. We're going to talk during the break, and then we're going to continue on the other side. Stay with me.
We're
okay.
On the march. The Empire's on the
I'm
run.
I'm going to keep Mr. Hoffman up.
Alex Jones.
Mr. Hoffman, what we're going to do is I'm going to skip some of the breaks. Now, AM and FMs won't hear you. Shortwave won't hear you, but huge Internet audiences and huge Internet TV audiences will. And the archiving of some of these breaks will let you break. Some breaks we're going to talk straight through. So I want to continue the discussion during some of the breaks, okay?
Okay, Alex.
Great. And guys at the network, please close your mic. Okay. Now, I don't want to make this too confusing from the start. You can talk about whatever group you want. Say what you truly believe. Feel free to say whatever you want, Mr. Hoffman. I want to be clear about that. But I was confused in the last segment, and I didn't want to talk about ads, and then it clicked in my mind about some Catholics run it all ad that runs on the network. And, of course, I'm not a Catholic. I'm not a Catholic apologist. I just think it's exaggerated, their power. I think they're part of the New World Order like every other big thing. But let me just get some kind of idea, and this is on air right now. Because I haven't done a pre-interview with you. I don't really do those. Tell me what it is you want to cover in the 2 hours we've got.
Well, I would like to cover my main thesis right now. I'm just finishing up. I'm indexing a nearly 1,000-page book on Judaism called Judaism Discovered. And so, obviously, that would be the source and focus of what I want to talk about today, although I realize I've written other books, and I know you're interested in the epistemology of the cryptocracy as I've elucidated it in my book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare.
And that's the system they use, and my only point is that school of thought is used by others, though you could argue they're the masters in the preeminent group, the strand that binds it all. And so I'd like to hear your view and your research on that. With 2 hours, then let's just get into the Judaism first for an hour, and then let's do an hour on all of their different methods and sorceries.
Right, and the other thing I'd like to say to you, Alex, is feel free to challenge me if you think that there's something I'm saying that's erroneous. I find that it makes for a much more interesting conversation.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to have to physically restrain myself not to add points and jump in. But I have to tell you, sir, I researched stuff you're putting out, the information you're putting out, and I think on the whole it's accurate, only because I'm somewhat of a history buff in my own right. It's so wide and deep that we're all novices, really, but I've just found so much of what I've read you've written that I already discovered separately in multiple other texts that weren't even political in nature. So I have to agree with your overall view and analysis. I may disagree in the approach to the public, and also I believe that the globalists are also controlling much of the anti-Judaism movement and putting it out in a way that actually only empowers some of the more dangerous varieties there. And of course, the old European tool of using some of the Zionists as their fronts before it was known as Zionist, going back 1,000 years ago. So I believe it's kind of a hybrid amalgamation. But listen, you got the floor. We're going live right now.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Well,
Here we go, sir. Every move the New World Order makes, every breath they take, we'll be there. Covering every subject, every issue, going to the Veritas. Trying to find the truth. Trying to question the box within a box that we all live in. All right, Michael Hoffman is our guest. Michael, before we go any further, tell us in a nutshell a little bit about yourself, your awakening for a minute or two, your website, your books, and then we're going to go for 2 hours pretty much straight here with only a few breaks. Go ahead.
The website is www.revisionisthistory.org, and we're located in North Idaho, P.O. Box 849, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83816. I was fortunate enough to have been born to a revisionist historian grandfather. He was a lay historian. He wasn't a professional, but he had a great deal of skepticism about the mainline story of history. So I was basically sitting on his knee from a young age, hearing him talking about things like, for example, that Joseph P. Kennedy had stolen the election in 1960 for his son through the Chicago Mafia, and I was hearing this practically as a toddler. So I suppose I've been predestined for this line of inquiry, for being a skeptic, for always questioning and doubting, and as John Milton said in the 17th century, give me the right to know, to utter, and to argue freely according to conscience above all other liberties, and that's what I've tried to live and what I've tried to extend to others, Alex.
Now let me just throw out something here. It's become a thought crime to say that CO2 isn't deadly poison, to say that sodium chloride isn't deadly poison. It has become a thought crime to even question official stories, official history. But questioning Deborah Jean Palfrey's clear murder, when we now have another eerie flashback, D.C. Madam said, I'll never want my life to end in suicide. She not only said that here on this show, in May 2007 for an interview for Carol Joyt, host of Q&A Cafe TV show, Palfrey faced criminal indictment for prostitution, but for Palfrey, one thing was crystal clear during the interview. She would not end her life by hanging herself. At last, Brandy Britton, one of her employers, had clearly murdered as well. I don't want to be like her. I don't want to end up like that. So another source, we're questioning history. Within 1 hour of her being found, official story, open and shut, she committed suicide in the garage, hanging herself, absolute bull. So that's questioning history, and that now is a thought crime they want to arrest you for. So we have to stand up against this now, no matter how painful or how demonized we get, because even if you disagree with ideas you hear here, you need to fight for the right for people to say them and have them. Okay, Mr. Hoffman, go ahead.
Well, and this particular questionable death that you're referring to reminds me as far back as Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, who a lot of us believe was tossed out of a window, and they claimed that that was suicide. And, of course, the secrets and the knowledge that he was sitting on were absolutely cataclysmic in terms of what he might have or could have revealed. So they certainly have a long history of doing this, but I'm not privy to the details of this particular case. But lately, since the year 2000, I have been consumed with my research on Judaism and on Zionism and the Talmudic religion, because I feel that it's a key to understanding the cryptocracy as a whole. And during the break, you had mentioned to me that you also feel there are some aspects of anti-Judaism which are problematic, and I would agree with that insofar as I believe that the cryptocracy plants their own agence provocateur inside various groups, and then they take extreme positions which actually benefit Judaism. One of the prime ways that they benefit Judaism is whenever you have race hate injected into this discussion. Because
and that brings, and the Zionist documents going back 200 years say that it compacts their group, and then they feed on the lower Jews beneath them, and the Jews think that their leaders are taking care of them, when Israel admittedly has been caught doing bombings in Baghdad 60-something years ago, bombings in southern Spain, all of these things to drive Jews back to their homeland. So
Judaics are the first victims of Judaism.
Yes.
That's something that has to be understood, is that the freedom movement that I'm leading here with regard to Judaism is first an attempt to liberate individual Judaics from Judaism.
And so you disagree with the main line of the crazies that say Jews are really Neanderthals and crazies that go around stirring up trouble and making people look stupid that talk about this. You disagree. You're saying you don't believe they're inherently devil seed.
Yeah, this reptilian idea and all of that, what it really means is it means that Jesus Christ was wrong and that people can't be converted. If someone is inherently the seed of the devil, all you can do is exterminate them. You cannot convert them. So you can see the occult root to that, and you can see the black evil that's behind that.
Well, that's my point, is that you know, 15 years studying this, every time I met somebody who said it was the Jews, they were lying, backstabbing, crazy, lying scum who would always attack me. And then I'm like, my God, the people that believe this must be bad, because everybody I meet is like, but I guess they're provocateurs or crazies or losers who want to blame a group. But just because they're doing that doesn't mean this isn't a predatory group out of control.
Well, it's a predatory ideology which is out of control, but there's another factor here, and that is, who is a Jew? I mean, people run around calling themselves Jews, and in John chapter 8, Jesus said that they had as their father the father of lies. So why do we believe them? all of the genealogical records were destroyed when the Romans conquered Jerusalem in A.D. 70.
Titus.
So we only have the word of these rabbinic liars to say that they're descended from King David or Abraham. You and I may have more Abrahamic blood in our veins than they do, but my question and my challenge to them is prove it. Prove that you're descended from Judah.
Well, so they've done the DNA test, and they know that about 82% of people claiming to be Jews are actually Central Eastern European Khazars. And that's people call me all the time like they found some new secret. I remember reading that when I was 10 years old in mainline history.
Right. So what that also does, though, it's interesting because it absolves these interlopers from actually being the biblical Jews. They don't have any kind of a curse on them, although I believe even when we are talking about actual Israel, and certainly there is a remnant of Israel on the earth, as Scripture says, but that curse was only on the few generations there, the early generations that would have been implicated in the death of Christ. It certainly wouldn't correspond to any actual biological Jew who was alive today. But this racial issue, Alex, one of the things that we have to understand here is that the rabbis are very keen on keeping Judaics inside the ranks. So they have to use the Hitlers, the Nazis, and the haters to scare the Judaic people back into the fold of Judaism. Because one of the things that Judaism teaches in the Talmud is that no matter how nice, how good, how benevolent a Gentile is towards you, he's only doing it for ulterior, cynical motives. He can never really love you for yourself. And a corollary from that, if I may expand on this, is the idea that if someone attacks the Israeli government, if they say they're genocidal, they're instituting a Holocaust against the Palestinians, if they say, like Walt and Mersheimer do in their book on the Israeli lobby, that there's inordinate power and control of the United States government on the part of the Israeli lobby, the reaction of the main hardcore of Orthodox Judaism and Zionism is to say, you know, that's inherently anti-Semitic. You don't really have a valid point. What you're motivated by is hatred and bias towards us. And of course,
exactly. I mean, if you and people always say, "Well, I don't hate Jews. I just hate Zionists." But now those guys have all flipped and are saying, "I do hate Jews. It is the Jews." And
well, then if they're saying that, Alex, they're falling right into the rabbi's trap.
Well, no. I know. I've read the official documents they wrote where they said, "Isn't it wonderful? You know, we'll get people to persecute us. We'll even commit horrible crimes and let the Gentiles find out, so they'll persecute us, so we can then have our little slaves under us." And you know, not letting Hitler kick the Jews out, saying, "No, they have to come to Palestine. They've got to pay us money. One cow in Palestine is worth more than all the Jews in Germany." I mean, you know these sickening, evil statements. These types of things. All I'm saying is it's a lot more sophisticated. Let me digress, and then we'll get back into this. Why is there such an obsession with Germanicness by the modern Zionists? Why do we see the Rothschilds funding different German institutes of eugenics? Why do we see them funding it now? Why are they intermarried with European Germanics? Why are they supporting Schwarzenegger wearing his Nazi belt buckle in public? I mean, certainly you see that there's a weird satanic wedding going on behind the scenes, or you disagree with that?
Well, I would say that there's some of that going on, but it's a complex issue because it's more behind the scenes, overtly in public. They have impressed upon the German people the mark of Cain, a hereditary stigma, which is a form of mental colonization. The Germans internalized this. They have one of the lowest birth rates and highest suicide rates.
And they did that to blacks, too, with the transatlantic slave trade.
Well, they did that.
They had them internalized that they weren't humans or they were bad. They were Cain or Ham, right?
Yeah, as we talked about in the last program, they gave them this notion that they were hereditary slaves, and that was a part of a taint there. I'm getting an echo on the line here all of a sudden. I don't know if that's just at my end or your.
We're not getting it on the network. Network, are you getting that hum?
Nope, nothing.
I'm not hearing anything, sir.
Okay, great. I'll just proceed then.
All right.
And so what I would say is that I see a cleavage between this idea that there is sort of a secret linkage between the Germanic elite and the elite of the cryptocracy.
Well, I mean, let me stop you right there. I mean, $80+ billion in the last 4 years from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation with Warren Buffett, and they're in Africa injecting them with HIV. They're poisoning them. They've been caught. It's in the documents. They've been caught carrying out eugenics. I mean, that I would call Hitler-esque. But if the Judaics run it, I guess they want all the blacks and Asians dead too, or what?
Well, that's a little bit outside my competence in terms of discussing this.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying, though, is that the Darwinistic view, the Francis Galton view. I mean, when I get to the bet, I mean, the head of the Human Genome Project, Dr. Watson, saying blacks basically weren't human. You know, he's a white guy, and he's running the Human Genome Project, running around saying blacks aren't human. I'm saying, you know, I understand in the media and everywhere else you can see the Zionists, but I'm saying when I get into science and I get into foundations and I get into this, I mean, it's Hitlerian, it's eugenics. I'm saying I've really found that, and I've really found Zionists everywhere too. So what I'm saying,
right, but it's Hitlerian, but Hitler is an anomaly in terms of German civilization. It would be like saying that George Bush is a typical product of our American civilization.
No, but when I say Germanic, I don't mean even the German people. I'm talking about Germanic occultism. And I'm not attacking Germans. I'm saying that there is a relish. The eugenicists, the British eugenicists, Rothschild-funded eugenics institutions worship the Germanic form.
Well,
there's something else here. Is something more here is what I'm saying.
I don't see any larger role in the occult for the Germans than for any other of the European peoples.
But you know, Germanic means wider. I mean, Germanic is the main, you know, fulcrum in that entire region, even into northern France.
Well, they certainly always wanted to control the Germans, but prior to the rise of Hitler, Germany and German civilization was a paragon of the music of Bach and Beethoven and the great philosophy and the advances in religion and science.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Which we owe so much to the Germans.
Pharmacologicals, everything.
I mean, there is a role in the early Ordo Templi Orientis of the OTO. There is a German connection there, and there's a German connection to Skull and Bones. But if we were to talk about the British, and again, that wouldn't be an indictment of the...
Oh, no, I'm saying the British are the absolute heart. I'm just saying, why do they, as a fetish, you know, get into the Guter Dammerung and all of that. Look, it doesn't matter. The point is...
Well, you know, it's interesting, though, Alex, because they say that people who are in the know tell me that when you go to these collection catalogs for Nazi memorabilia and Nazi relics, that the number of Judaic customers on there is astonishing.
No, that's... Yeah.
And perhaps you use the appropriate word. Perhaps it's a fetish.
Yeah, no, I'm really study this stuff. I really want the truth. And I'm just saying, I've knocked down the hidden doors. I've gone, burrowed into the deepest pits. And, I mean, I find a bunch of weird, druidic, don't even call it Germanic. I see all of Northern Europe and you know, Britannia as Germanic, Visigothian, whatever you want to call it. So I think when I use the term German, I'm not talking about the last, you know, Bismarckian Imperial Germany. But, look, I digress. Just, you know what? I may even have to even go out of the room because this stuff gets me thinking so much. I'll just let you finish. Just go ahead.
Well, Hitler used a good luck symbol, the swastika, which prior to the rise of his regime was always universally associated with good luck. All it is the symbol of the sun in motion. You put a cross inside of a wheel, you knock four segments of it out, and it looks like a running man or an intimation of the sun. An early pagan symbol, always associated generically with good luck, and he twisted it into this horrible thing. I think in general there is a magnetic archetype associated with the Northern European model, both racially and in terms of some of the things that we see in our movies and culture, as far as these associations with the polar regions and with the sword and sorcery epics. So it wouldn't surprise me if at some level in the occult or heavy metal music, or even at the higher levels that you're insinuating are operant here, that they are mining that, so to speak. But what I can tell you from my own research, what my opinion is that far above that and far beyond that is the Kabbalah, the Talmud, and the veritable worship, not of the German or the Aryan or any archetype along those lines, but the worship of the Judaic male as personified by the rabbi. because Judaism does teach.
I mean, there's no doubt that Madonna and all of it. I mean, it's everywhere. The symbolism. No, it's dominant. I agree. Go ahead.
Madonna is a. I hesitate to use the word witch because of all of the inquisitorial connotations of that word. So I would call her a magician, and I would say that her recent 30-minute show in New York City had all the hallmarks of a Kabbalistic open-air ritual that was both broadcast on the internet and also much to do was made of it in New York
City. Well, she says it is. She says she's doing this. She's that chicken-necked coward is what she is. These people just radiate weakness, but go ahead.
And she's also a kind of a mirror image of a biblical figure because she calls herself Madonna, and I guess that's her birth name.
Jezebel.
But that's her actual identity would be Jezebel. But what we find is, for example, in Judaism, they say, well, you Gentiles can be saved and you can be part of the covenant if you become a Noahide. But actually, they're not talking about the biblical Noah any more than Madonna is a representative of the Blessed Virgin Mary. She's the exact opposite. And the Talmudic Noah is the exact opposite of the biblical Noah. So all these poor dupes and suckers who are joining Judaism, there's two ways to be a Gentile and join Judaism. One is through Holocaustianity and going down to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. and believing everything that's there and believing that only one people on earth suffered a Holocaust. That's one inroad in. And the other way is through the Noahide. But you're not following the biblical Noah. You're following the Noah of the Talmud.
But also people that, quote, join it are only porch Masons or, you know, porch. That's what goes back to Solomon. We'll be right back. Actually, we're going to skip this break for Infowars.com stream listeners. Go to that stream. You'll be able to hear this break. And then we'll come back for everybody else on the other side in 3 minutes. Okay, Mr. Hoffman, continue.
Yes, and so in the case of the Noahide and the Noah of the Talmud, the Talmud regards Noah as a drunk and a very unsavory character. And what you really have is you have a trap for Gentiles. They're going to, it's like the old story where Dracula couldn't enter your home unless you invited him in.
He has to trick you to invite him in. But let me stop you there. Let's just, when we come back, start at the beginning so people understand this about how the Torah is different than the Talmud and the Zohar and all those, and how they're separate, because they're hearing this going, the Bible says Noah's good. They need to understand two separate deals. You got a Middle Eastern group, you got a European group that just picked up on things that Jews picked up in Babylon and, of course, in Egypt, and then try to explain that to people.
Yeah, good point.
But just go ahead for now, because we're going straight through.
Okay, well, did you want me to continue with the Noahide thing?
Go ahead on that, and then let's come back to the full audience and get into the separation here. Go ahead.
All right, and you'll let me know when we're addressing the full audience.
Yeah, we'll be addressing in 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, the Talmud is bringing people, it's using people to think. These poor Christian people who think, gosh, here's the holy blood of Israel flowing the veins of these rabbis, and I've got to get amalgamated with them, and the way to do that is to associate with this Noahide group. And then just like you ask Dracula, oh, won't you come into my home? And having done that, then he has a certain power over you. So you join the Noahide group, and whereas right now you and I are basically trying to expose these evils, but when you actually sign on for the evil, then of course you lose a certain amount of your volition and your cognition, and it's that much easier to snatch your soul and control you. And that's what the Noahide operation is. It has nothing to do with the scriptures whatsoever, but people don't understand that there's this mirror world operating in Judaism.
Well, sure. I mean, that's the Pastor Hagee, where in the final equation, Jesus isn't the Messiah, we're all bad, hail Israel, they are the God men.
Yeah, Rabbi Hagee and his Ku Klux Judaism are really, it's such a joke that you would laugh if you didn't feel like crying. I mean, you don't.
Well,
really,
I mean, I've seen him
do
on tape go, "I praise God every time a Palestinian child is shot because another devil has been dealt with." I mean, he is just such a little fake. And Jesus did not come to be the Messiah. He was a rebel against the Lord's people and was dealt with.
And yet,
but you know what? He was forced to pull that book.
Yeah, but can you imagine that John McCain maintains respectability even though he's allied with him with certain qualifications?
I know, it's incredible. We're going back live right now. Here we go. Okay. Be clear, though, about the separate groups. Like, you have the Torah, which is the Old Testament, which is literally 180 degrees from what comes later. I mean, let's start at the beginning here.
Yeah, well, you know, we're dealing with master deceivers, and so there's a counterfeit. We were talking about that, at the commercial break, how there are, it's a mirror world, a mirror of the scripture, and a mirror of biblical patriarchs and biblical figures. And so we will hear Orthodox rabbis say, well, we're Torah true. We have to follow the Torah. We have the Torah. And in fact, the rabbis tell those who are part of Judaism, you can't understand the Bible without the mediation of our interpretation of it. Protestants don't seem to have a problem with that. They have a huge problem with the idea that the Pope claims to be a mediator of Scripture. But when the rabbis make that claim, they seem to be very apathetic about that. And I don't understand that. But anyhow, let's be clear about the Torah. When they say that they're Torah true, they mean that they're Talmud true, because there is the Torah Shebiktav, which is the written Torah, and the Torah Shebelpa, which is the oral Torah. The oral,
and they say
law.
That is the real law, not the old law.
Well, yeah, what they say is there is a dual law, that Moses was given two laws on Mount Sinai, the oral law, which became the province of the rabbis, and which was only written down after Israel crucified its Messiah and then really became degenerate. Prior to that, it had been a toss-up which way they were going to go, and so they had never sufficiently lost the grace to commit this evil to writing.
Moses, when he actually went after him throwing the tablets, he was going after this group, is what a lot of people say.
Well, I certainly think that it must have started around the time of the golden calf.
Well, they were bringing back the Egyptian secret knowledge they'd found, and he was saying no. So it's that same group always running right next to the other.
Yes, as we mentioned in the last broadcast, the Talmud says 10 measures of sorcery were given to the earth, 9 were given to Egypt, and 1 to the rest of humanity. So they certainly see Egypt as a source of magic and sorcery. Of course, officially they condemn Egypt, but actually, secretly, they have tapped into that power, and they actually pay obeisance to it.
And as you said last time you were on, or as the late Arthur C. Clarke said, a Texas Instruments calculator would be the highest order of magic to somebody just 200 years ago. So when we use the term magic sorcery, that's ways to manipulate populations, lie, spin things, and then they just package it in a bunch of mumbo-jumbo. Go ahead.
Yeah, because leftist intellectuals could accuse us of mystifying the discussion by bringing in magic, but actually they're the ones who are mystifying when they refuse, when they use this agnosticism, to refuse to recognize how technology operates. And the last program I mentioned that Arthur C. Clarke his famous statement was that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a science which even certain scientists have been able to cover up and mock and direct our attention away from by claiming, oh, that's just silly fairy tales, but it isn't. And Arthur C. Clarke, who was a pioneer and prophet of the satellites that we now have operating around our Earth and a key agent of the cryptocracy.
Yeah, he's the inventor of it. Go ahead.
So he's our source for that. So you see, Alex, we have this counterfeit. We have the Noahide covenant, but actually it has nothing to do with the biblical Noah. It's the Noah of the Talmud and of the post-Talmudic text.
Which is what the Torah tells us, is that this group will always have counterfeits. They're masters at doing that.
Sure. Revelation 2:9 talks about, I know them who say they are Jews and are not and are of the synagogue of Satan. So right there, we're being warned of a counterfeit. Jesus in the key book of John in chapter 8 talking about the counterfeit. And that's a key scene there in chapter 8 because it pertains directly to what we're dealing with now, where they say, we have Abraham's blood in our veins. We are the children of Abraham. And Jesus acknowledges their biological pedigree. But at the same time, he says, you can't have Abraham as your father.
Stay there.
You are listening to GCN.
Bring him up for me, please. Mr. Hoffman, we're going to be back in 1 minute, so I'm going to go ahead and spare discussion now for this 1 minute, okay?
Sure.
We're going to go. We'll be back in about 60 seconds.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Discussions and debates, you get it here. In this fourth hour, we're going to go 20 minutes more with our guest in Overdrive. You can do it. We're going to skip some of the network breaks so I can talk behind the scenes for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers and people listening to the streams at Infowars.com. You've got to go to those audio streams, that'll be able to tune into it. Or you can miss out on it if you'd like. Mr. Hoffman, go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I think is important to understand, Alex, is that we need counterintelligence and we need to recruit among the Judaics themselves. And that's one of the reasons why I've been able to profit in my research has been that I have had Judaic informants inside the yeshivas and the kollels who assist me with my research, and I want to encourage that, and I wouldn't be able to benefit from the details they've given me if they thought that I was a racist hater. And it feeds into the rabbi's image of the Gentile and of the Christian if we in any way reinforce that image. Now, what I wanted to do was I wanted to give you the actual teaching that Talmudic children receive in Orthodox Judaism. This is a phrase that's repeated to them throughout their childhood, and I'll give it to you now. Halakha hi beyadoa shi asav sonai lel Yaakov. And translated, that means it is a given law. It is known that Esau hates Jacob. Now, they see themselves as Esau, and we are Jacob. And what they're being told from the time they're little children is that they are irrationally hated just because they are Judaic. Not because they mistreat the Palestinians, not because they have inordinate influence over Congress. Now, if we, in our information campaign, fulfill that stereotype, as so many people in the right wing and the neo-Nazi movement and even in the Arab world have done and are doing and are encouraged to do by agent provocateurs, we are then doing the work of the rabbis, because we need to convert rabbis and we need to convert Judaics. Judaics who are listening to me right now, Jesus loves you. He wants to free you from these burdens, this terrible yoke that the Talmudists have put upon you.
Well, it's the same thing like our government, and that's the same mindset. You see the same paradigm, the same signature. The government's going to keep you safe from the terrorists. Really, the government's behind it. The government's going to take your rights to keep you safe. No, they're not keeping us safe. They're hurting us and sucking off of us. It's the same group with the leadership using their mind control system on their own people. I mean, you already said that twice, but I want to make that clear. Go ahead.
Well, because what they're saying is there is a racial war to the hilt, and it's irremediable. There's nothing that they can do to change their race, and therefore, since they describe all of us, or the majority of us, as being racial haters of them, you then have this chasm that can't be bridged. And so if we actually take that position, as so many in the past have, then we're shooting ourselves in the feet. So it's very, very important to understand that we're dealing here with an ideology, and with a spiritual force. And, for example, this spiritual force, as you know on your program and have brought up many times, operates within Freemasonry, and they're the most blue-eyed, blonde-haired, Aryan Gentiles they can be. We have evil in every race and every nation, but because of the nature of the Talmud and the Kabbalah, that evil is centered on this notion of the racial supremacy of the Judaic as personified by the rabbi. Now,
which is in the Talmud, which is in the Zohar, which is in all the books, and then it's in Encyclopedia Judaica, but we're not supposed to talk about that.
And we're actually dealing with the source of racism in the world as a whole, because it's not in the Bible. And it certainly is not in Islam. Islam may have many problems and many errors, and there's no question about that, but Islam does not practice racism. This, the most searing and ferocious and savage racism on the earth today is the racism of the Talmud, and then it's practiced and implemented in the Zionist Israeli state.
Okay, stay there. Stay there. We're going to continue during the break. If you're an InfoWars listener, stay with us, and I will be right back. Okay, now I want to debate with you a little bit here. There's no doubt it says all that and does that and it's wrong, but then I look at every culture, or even one African tribe across the river from the other, they'll say the other tribe's bad, we're the best, you know, they worship the snake god, we worship the monkey god, we're better, or we worship the water buffalo god. You've got, you know, groups are always, I mean, everybody says our team's the best, or, you know, folks from East Texas are better than North Texans. We're all tribal. I mean, everybody says the other group isn't human and deserves to die. That's what the Aztecs would say when they were wiping out, you know, neighboring native tribes with sacrifice. You're not making the claim, though, as some do, that all evil and all racism emanates out of one place, are you?
Well, what I would say is that this tribalism that you're talking about is part of human nature. Now, I'm a Christian, so I'm supposed to be unnatural. I mean, that's what a Christian is, in the sense that, for example...
But you're saying out of the three major faiths that spring out of Abraham, you're saying the one that has the new text, the Zohar and the rest of it, and the Talmud, that has codified these ideas, you're saying it comes from the Judaics.
Well, of course, I don't believe that Judaism springs from Abraham. I don't see it as an Abraham.
What was Moses then? Judaism. You would call that Israel.
No, that's not Judaism. Judaism didn't get started until this oral law was written down.
I understand.
That.
So what would you call him, an Israelite?
I would call him an Israelite. And I would say the only Old Testament religion on earth is Christianity.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, it's definitely the root.
But okay. If we see that they have a patrimony to Abraham, then we're beginning to see through their distorted lens.
Like you said earlier, that thing they said is that Abraham's bad. Yeah, I mean, that's insane, because...
That Noah's bad. No.
Yeah, but before that, you were saying what they say as kids about how they're the one group and they're against Abraham.
Well, they say that they are Jacob... And I may have misstated it.
I think that's what you did, yeah, because I always thought it was Jacob and the Arabs of the other group. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, they believe that they're Jacob and we're Esau, so I actually apologize for that. I got that mixed up. They see themselves as Jacob, we are Esau, and so we're doing this.
And then that's what got picked up with the transatlantic slave trade.
Well, that's part of coming from the Midrash and from the Guide of the Perplexed of Rabbi Moses Maimonides. The anti-black teaching is in those two documents, although you've got to get the uncensored version of the Guide of the Perplexed as translated by Shlomo Pines. If you get any other version, usually the racial material has been excised.
Yeah, okay. We're going to come back right now. We're going live. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Our guest for the rest of this hour, into the next, we're going into overdrive today. Michael Hoffman. He'll give out his website, some of his books, tell you how to get them before he leaves us. He can do it anytime he wishes. If he wants, we'll take calls later. We'll see if he wants to do that. Continuing, we were having a discussion on the InfoWars stream and for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers, and I asked you, I said, you know, don't you mean Jacob against Esau? And you said, yes, you'd gotten that backwards earlier, probably with all my interrupting. So, just continue wherever you'd like.
Yeah, the website is www.revisionisthistory.org. And yes, when I was translating Halakha Hibayota Shi Esav Sonei El Yaakov, I actually transposed it incorrectly. The Judaics regard themselves, of course, as Jacob, and we are Esau, and they see this as a racial divide that can never be breached, and that's why they have this sense of immunity and entitlement that they're never wrong, they never have to apologize, they never commit war crimes, and any accusations along those lines are being fielded by latter-day Esau's against themselves as Jacob.
So that's kind of codifying a psychopathic outlook.
It is. It's a religion which has the symptoms of psychopathology because they have delusions of grandeur as being the superior master race on earth, and they're also paranoid in that they have this incipient fear of opposition. And those are two symptoms, of course, of insanity.
But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because it's an intelligent, you know, group that is getting a lot of power, and so there's going to be competition, and there is also going to be people fighting.
Well, it's constant warfare. Zionism, I usually append the word Zionism with war. It's war Zionism, and it's war to the hilt. And, of course, you see that on the West Bank with these settlers and their Talmudic philosophy of annihilating Amalek, which is what they refer to the Palestinians as Amalek. And, of course, in the Old Testament, Amalek was a people who were supposed to be exterminated. So they're actually calling for the extermination of the Palestinians. But, once again, that's not, Alex, on an Old Testament basis because, as you know, in the Old Testament, God says he did do away with Amalek. And he said, I will blot out its memory.
And he said also, kill their animals.
Yeah.
But see, how do you deal with that as a Christian? Because you've got the Old Testament, which Christians accept, and saying, yeah, go ahead and kill everybody when you take over this land. Kill them and their animals. But then modern, it's Talmudic, it's evil, it's bad, when they want to wipe everybody up.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I do just want to say, however, that the modern use of Amalek shows the Talmudic nullification of Scripture because God keeps his promises, and he said, I would blot out the memory of Amalek. True Christians today don't go around calling anybody Amalek, but the Talmudists do, and so they're actually contradicting the Old Testament. In terms of...
Also, God ended Amalek with an announcement.
Yeah, well, he ended it through his own power, and you challenged me with the idea of God taking out these nations in the Old Testament. Invariably, when a nation was destroyed in the Old Testament, it was a nation that was practicing sexual sin under occult auspices, and that will destroy us. It will destroy
Moloch, burning babies, Sam.
Yeah. So that's what we're talking. We're not talking about any innocent nation of people that God simply picked on because his chosen people were coming along. Because if you really read the Old Testament, it's an indictment against the Israelites. And the great prophets who Jesus said from Abel to Zechariah were killed. They were killed for criticizing Israel and telling them that they were falling short. Just like today, if we try to say the same things, we become under attack. And another indicator, Alex, that the religion of Judaism is not an Old Testament religion. We were talking earlier about how they disparage Noah. They also disparage the prophet Isaiah. Now, how can you do that and be an Old Testament religion? This comes out in my book that I'll be finishing up soon called Judaism Discovered. The prophet Isaiah, as you know, criticized Israel. And so the Talmud says of Isaiah that he had unclean lips. And they say that Isaiah was killed, and he got what he deserved. In fact, the Talmudic description of his death is that he was sawed with a saw that went right across his mouth to punish him for saying these terrible things about the Jews. Now, no biblical religion would ever side with the killers of Isaiah, but that's what Jesus identified them as. He said, you've been the killers of the prophets. And you've been the killers of the prophets historically, this ideology and the spirit that you embody. And that's what we're confronting in the Israeli state, and we're confronting among Orthodox Judaism today in the United States, where George Bush on April 15th, as all of his predecessors since Jimmy Carter did on Education Day USA, met with the Chabad Lubavitchers in the White House. He got his marching orders from them. He dedicated this nation to the phony Talmudic Noahide laws. Under the rulership of their dead messiah, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, that's been going on since Jimmy Carter, the conservative Ronald Reagan, both Bushes, And
let me ask you, what do you think Carter's doing now, going over and saying it's apartheid and genocide and wrong and being barred from entry to Israel and things like that?
Well, I'd have to preface my remarks on Jimmy Carter by saying that I was very, very angry at that man at one time, particularly when he instituted the cooperation with Castro for the disastrous Mariel boat lift. I don't know if he has ever really done penance for that, because he unleashed from Castro's insane asylums and prisons the dregs of that island nation. They came over here, they raped, they murdered, and they plundered, and that is on Jimmy Carter's record. Now, all I can do is surmise, Alex, that he has had a change of heart, that he's one of the very rare people who has been at the top that knows he was implicated in sin and wrong and evil, and in his own way he's trying to make up for that. And I think he's doing that in his trips to the Middle East. I think he's doing good work. His book on the apartheid system over there is wonderful. I don't agree with all of it. But this is a man who is trying to fashion, in his own sort of stumbling way, a type of Christian witness in his old age. And I'll tell you, I'll take that rather than nothing. And we see this something similar happening with McNamara, the Secretary of Defense under Kennedy and Johnson. And he's
well, that's why the globalists a lot of times kill older globalists, because they do. Some people turn back, you know, kind of on the cross there at the last minute next to Christ. But expanding on that, and I do think he's doing it for good reasons, just from, you know, what I pick up, you know, his body language, listening to it, analyzing it. And it's not a hateful thing he's doing. He's doing it in a peaceable way. It's just that, again, everything you describe about Judaism, again, I see those similar excuses, those similar claims manifested in other cultures. This is obviously a dominant culture. I'm just wanting to add that, again, humans rationalize, come up with this same stuff across the board.
Oh, yeah, but see, we're all free to challenge all those people. We're free to challenge Reverend Wright when he makes these statements. We're free to challenge the Chinese on Tibet. But as soon as we do, we apply the same criterion to the Israelis and want to treat them equally as all other human beings who have both shortcomings and a good side and a bad side, suddenly we become Esau, they're Jacob, and it's Halakha Hibayota Shiesav Sonite Lel Yaakov. And that's a special situation that we're dealing with whenever we enter into the territory these rabbis.
I think the source... Now, are you saying in all rabbinical sects you basically get the same thing? Or are there particular... Because, I mean, I know, you know, in certain neighborhoods in New York or in the Middle East, the new film about bin Laden by Spurlock, he's just in Israel, and these rabbis start beating him up, calling him filth. You know, he's not allowed in the neighborhood. But then other rabbis run up and get him and say, no, that's a crazy group of people. You know, I mean, you know, like you have the one group of rabbis saying Israel shouldn't exist, which has got hundreds of thousands of people, Nutricardi and a few other groups. And then you've got other, there's also, from what I've seen, a few different brands of Zionism. I mean, you have the big dominant one, but then there's also some other ones. Or what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I'm talking mainly about Orthodox Judaism, because that, of course, was all the Judaism that existed on Earth until the Maskala, that's to say the Enlightenment, which coincides with the liberal Enlightenment in Europe at its height in the late 18th century. And prior to that, from the founding of Judaism after the oral traditions of men were committed to writing in the Mishnah and then later in the Gemara in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th centuries A.D., all you had was Orthodox Judaism. And then two branches, actually three, Reconstructionism, which is extremely liberal and almost not a factor here, but two main branches broke off, and that's the Reform branch, based on the Maskala or the Enlightenment, and the conservative branch, which tried to take a middle road between the two. And what that really means is, Alex, the majority of Judaics in America who are religious and who are following Judaism are Reform Judaics, and a lot of them have never seen the Talmud in their life.
But see, that's what I'm saying. Every Jew I know is just a friendly, nice person, and most of them don't even like the war, and they just feel persecuted because the news tells them they are, and for what their leaders do, they are getting some persecution because they individually haven't done anything. And see, that's my larger picture. I mean, in your massive study of this, you're probably one of the former scholars who honestly looks at it, not from a bigoted view, but from a, you know, just a cold scientific perspective. What's the power structure, you know, in the pyramidal structure? I mean, what percentage of the elite of the Judaics really know what's going on? And then, you know, what are the substratus? What's the command structure?
Well, see, one of the doors into Judaism for Gentiles I mentioned was the Noahide laws and Holocaustianity.
I was about to say the fake Christian Zionists now seem to be the one of the most dominant, virulent, vicious groups now.
Yeah, much to the scandalization of the gospel, because a whole generation of young people are now turned off to the Bible and Jesus Christ because they associate it with these bloodthirsty warmongers. But to get back to your question, the access route for these Reform Judaics, who are sort of just cultural Judaics, and they...
Tell you what, stay there. We got a break. We'll talk during the break about this. For the network, we'll be back in 4 minutes. Michael Hoffman is our guest. I thank all the listeners, all the affiliates, all of the sponsors, everybody. We'll be right back in 4 minutes for everybody else, for InfoWars.com stream listeners and PrisonPlanet.tv members. You can continue to watch right now. Okay, Mr. Hoffman, please continue with the power structure.
Yeah, so the door, Alex, for these sort of agnostic, liberal, Judaic types that you say that you're familiar with, the door into the Talmud through for them is through Zionism, because Zionism is actually the Talmud in action, even though the Israeli state was founded by communists and secularists.
So it's the modern political manifestation and the door for the secularists to enter back in.
Well, you have to use Moses Hess. And this will be in my book, and for those who subscribe to my newsletter, Revisionist History, they're already familiar with him, because he is the person who took inside himself both the Talmud, Zionism, and communism. Karl Marx called him my communist rabbi. He was also the spiritual founder of Zionism before Herzl, and he was actually loyal to the Talmud. He's an incredible personality, very important for people to study, to understand. He lived in the 1800s to understand how the 20th century came about and these evils were imposed on us. So that, because a listener can say, oh my gosh, Hoffman's trying to say that the road to the Talmud is through Zionism, but so many Israelis are secularists, they don't want to have anything to do with the Talmud. That's correct, to a degree. It's a generalization, and there's some distortion there, because the Talmud, as we've been talking about from the outset, is inherently, ipso facto, prima facie, racist. And what does it share with Zionism? Prima facie, ipso facto, racist. Now,
see, I want to be clear. That's why this system is so perfectly designed to take over other political systems, because it takes from Egypt, it takes from Rome, it takes from Babylon, it takes from the Old Temple, it takes all of those intrigues, and then it takes the Crusade clashes, and all of this... And then how to control your subgroup that thinks you're taking care of them, how to stage events, how to do all of this. It's a tiny ruling cabal that does study human behavior and activity ruling over these people. Now, would you say that the political Zionists are in control now, or are some of these rabbis still in control? And if so, which group of rabbis?
Well, I would say the main political rabbinic power is associated with the Chabad Lubavitch, because they are the ones who've been more or less delegated to go out into the world, to not be so much the literary recluses and bookworms, to go out there and do missionary evangelism with Judaics who have lapsed in their religion, and also to act as the political point men with the various leaders of the United States government.
Oh, you ought to hear them on the Christian radio shows. This is the craziest stuff I ever heard.
Well, and I'd be happy to debate an Orthodox rabbi if you can arrange it, or one of these other Christian programs do. I'd be delighted to do that. I'd be also delighted to take telephone calls today. But the Chabad Lubavitchers are probably the most politically endowed, both in the former Soviet Union, the Russian Federation, in the United States, and in Europe. Very powerful there. And when we're talking, all these neocons are talking about Islamic fundamentalism and the war on reason, and yet the Chabad Lubavitch and other allied rabbinic groups have tremendous political power. They're fanatic, they're fundamentalist, they're against the Enlightenment, they're against freedom, they're weaseling their way into Europe and the United States government, and yet whenever these guys with these myriad dozens and dozens of books about how the Islamics are making war on our way of life and they're going to abridge our freedom of speech, I've had my freedom of speech and my freedom of press abridged countless times as a result.
Well, I mean, that's a joke. Al-Qaeda attacked us because they hate our freedom, and the government's taking all our freedoms. That's right, they're Al-Qaeda. We're going to go back live right now, sir, and I do want to get some into, you know, the Twilight communication, all the, you know, the forms of brainwashing.
Sure.
I'd like to get into that soon. Here we go.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town. About the shack outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
LaGrange, the ranch, right outside Austin. Ha ha!
That was good.
Ha ha! Hard to turn this off. Good stuff. Our guest with us about 20 minutes into the next hour. We're going to end transmission after the overdrive. You'll need to go over to InfoWars.com, listen to the streams there if you're listening online. Be able to hear that extra 20 minutes coming up at about 40. Going back to Mr. Hoffman, all right, we've spent an hour on this where I really like your analysis. And, you know, what I read you did, you know, 8, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Yes, folks, I've read his stuff for more than a decade. I'm not just now discovering all this. It's just that people have to be more sophisticated in their approach to all of it. I will not feed into the New World Order's operations. I will not be part of it, as a lot of you have been. And I don't think Mr. Hoffman has it in any way. Okay, I do want to get into their whole twilight language, you know, all the different things that the globalists are doing, some of the allied crime syndicates, where you think their program's going. And then you also said you'd like to take some calls, so we'll do that in overdrive coming up in the next hour, if you can stay with us. In fact, I need to ask you, can you stay with us 20 minutes in the next hour?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. 512-646-5400. We will open that up in about 30 minutes. 512-646-5400. You can go ahead and get lined up if you'd like to talk to Mr. Hoffman. Now, let's get into, unless you have more you want to add about New World Order.
I just wanted to say www.revisionisthistory.org is our website, and I just wanted to finish one tail thought there, Alex, that the roots of Zionist racism are in the Talmud. So for people who claim that secular Israelis and secular Zionism couldn't possibly have a religious motivation, if you look around to Bolshevik Russia and you see these circumcised Judaics who were inflicting this Holocaust on the Russian Orthodox Church and on Christians there, they weren't doing it out of simply atheistic motives. They were doing it out of a religious hate which had been inculcated in them in their youth. So you can be a secularist as you grow up, but if you always have this sort of cerebral nostalgia, and you see so many times these hyphenated Judaics, have you noticed them, where they'll say, well, I'm a Buddhist Jew or I'm an atheist Jew. Most of us, if we're Christians or we're Italians or we're Irish, and we go on to a different world, a different strata, we don't continue to maintain our original identification, but they do. So here, a lot of them, not all of them, of course. And so what we have here is we have a nationalistic connection which survives even a transmogrification into a new world of Buddha or Tibet or atheism. They still cling to a racial national identification with the Israeli state and with their people.
Now, there's no doubt, though, that Western Europeans had what they believed was a providence, what they believed was manifest destiny, and that they would use the Torah as an excuse to exterminate the Native Americans. So there we see something similar to what the Zionists are doing, or similar to what whites were doing with apartheid with that. So I just want to make the point.
I don't buy the idea that there was an extermination of the American Indians in New England. I think we'd have to take it century by century. Certainly when these Union generals at the end of the war between the states went out there and tried to make the Midwest safe for the railroads and the corporations, yes, there was oppression of the Indians and a lot of lying and a lot of disgusting things.
Well, look, I like Andrew Jackson, but I've also got some Native American in me, Comanche and Cherokee. So I also like Native Americans, and you know, it was humans. You could hire natives to kill natives, and it was huge battles. And people say, look at the Indian killer, the Native killer, Andrew Jackson, who I like, fought the New World Order. That was when it was 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, 10-1, fighting the natives. It wasn't like they were shrinking violet wimps or something.
Yeah, and also
but the point is, they did say it's our right to go and take over. It's ours. My point is, that is a human trait. I'm just being honed and focused and wicked and vicious through the Zionists, but I'm just saying, I want to, again, let us all recognize this in ourselves, that tribes do this to each other.
Well, that's true, but I think when we're associating Christianity with that and with the Torah, and I want all respect paid to the Torah and to the religion of Jesus Christ, then I don't
I'm not attacking that. I'm saying it was used in Manifest Destiny, was it not?
Well,
was it not cited?
Yeah, Manifest Destiny being different from what the Christians who came to New England were practicing.
Oh, well, it was the Christians who freed the slaves. I understand that. I'm not saying Christians, so that's a... stay there. We're going to talk during the break. You want to flesh that out? Go ahead, sir.
Puritans fought a war of survival in New England with the Indians, but they made many efforts to convert them. David Brainerd was one of those people that Jonathan Edwards praised. And, in fact, if you go into what I think is really solving the...
But there were abuses in the name of the religion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every one of us has to keep a humility about our own selves.
My whole point is, this is silly to, I mean, and I know you don't agree with that, to say that Jews are inherently evil. That's the point I'm trying to get at here, is I'm not saying it's not honed and focused and really dangerous and going on. I'm saying that this is a tribal manifestation put into a hyper-aggressive package.
Yes, and so many Judaics, as you pointed out from your own personal experience, are not affiliated with the Talmud, they're not affiliated with Judaism, but like you and I, it's easy to put a flag in their hand, give them a slogan, and sweep them along with the mob, and that's what's happening to them, because certainly as part of my campaign and my ministry, first and foremost is an outreach to the Judaic people to liberate them so that they can be more part of the solution.
And then I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that you get attacked by some of the neo-Nazis that clothe themselves as more reasonable, claiming you're bad because you want to reach out. They're saying Jews are inherently evil.
Yeah, and there a lot of those people are almost completely insignificant. They had a higher profile in the past when you saw, for example, the Canadian Zionists were funding John Beatty, who was running the Canadian Nazi Party.
We've caught German intelligence running the Nazi groups, firebombing the poor Turks. Then they go, oh, we have to leave your borders open. You firebomb the Turks. It turns out it was German intel. They've had Nazis in Idaho, as you know, who really are being funded by rabbis out heiling Hitler. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
The Aryan Nations in Idaho was one of the greatest FBI listening posts that had ever been established in the United States. Randy Weaver's family would be alive today had Randy not gone up to Aryan Nations. And the real history of Aryan Nations and how the media kept that alive and has really not come out. Maybe someday there will be a book on it.
Absolutely. Got another coffee, thank you. Yeah, that's one problem with not having breaks is that I then can't even get my own stimulant here. All right, listen.
I can tell you just as a sideline, Alex, that Timothy McVeigh was up here in our neck of the woods, as you probably know, at the Shadow.
He was at gun shows here in Austin. He was everywhere creating that ledger. Go ahead.
Well, he was with the Keyhole Boys, who were implicated in some of the murders where they were knocking off some of the witnesses of the Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh, yeah, and then you also had the bank robberies going on right out of Elohim City that it turned out official news Southern Poverty Law Center was running. Exactly.
Aryan Nations, neo-Nazi network, all these patsies, these buffoons, these child molesters, these gun runners, ex-cons, they were all being funneling into this movement. But at the last minute...
Stay there. You know what? Recap that now with the full audience. Here we go. We were just talking about how the main Nazi groups, I mean, in the British papers, in the U.S., caught over and over again, not just run, but founded by British intel, German intel, ADL connections, Southern Poverty Law Center. It's come out in official FBI documents, funding and running Elohim City, the main Nazi compound in Oklahoma, tied in with the rabbis and the Aryan Nations, running it in Idaho. And Mr. Hoffman's up there. This has all come out in the news, but the average American doesn't understand. Again, they need Nazism. They need hatred of Jews. So the controlling group can use the Jews as their slaves, as a subgroup. And then they, very sophisticated, but also very simple in a way, elaborate on what you were just saying.
And also keeping, Alex, well, I'd like to continue that very good point you're making there. Also keeping Judaic people who are inside Judaism and who could reveal so much, like some of these Muslims who get out of Islam and they're going around on speaking tours. We need to have converted former rabbis who are converted to Christ going around the country telling what they know. And
well, that's happened before, and they get killed pretty fast.
Well, you know, I'm a positive thinker. I believe that God is on our side, and as long as he's on our side, who can be against us?
Absolutely. If God be with us, who can be against us?
You got that right. So, yeah, we were talking about Timothy McVeigh being up here at the Shadows Motel in Spokane, Washington, and he was meeting with the Kehoe brothers who were implicated in knocking off some of the witnesses to the Oklahoma City bombing conspiracy. And when this information was presented to the federal judge at the trial there, he ruled it out of evidence, irrelevant, absolutely, because they really didn't want to reveal the role of what you and I are talking about, or how they use these patsies, and they certainly have patsies on the left as well, the violent animal rights crusaders and...
Do you ever notice, provocateurs, do you ever notice how the groups that claim they're exposing Zionism, they just freak out, attack everybody else, cause fights, claim people have been kidnapped that haven't, just run around wildly. They've always got criminal backgrounds. They're being handled. They're being run. Whereas I'm saying, everybody come together. Everybody's human. Let's just not be tribal. Yeah, there's evil mafias. Let's, I'm trying to tell listeners, empower yourselves. Take action. We can win. We can fight evil. Notice the other guys, they never do that. It's a key MO.
Right, and I think that the lesson of the New Testament, at least for me anyway, as a believer, is that you cannot be in contention with these things using carnal weapons. The system loves violence. They absolutely feed on it. And
well, that's why they stage terror attacks. I love these guys that call me, write me, you coward, filth. You're not calling for guns and shooting people. You're a coward. But they're posting on my website. Then we catch them with the same IP posting, look at this guy threatening. I'm calling the government, and the government shows up at my office. But we know from the IP it's them. They're feds.
Yeah, they absolutely need this violence. They need it in the Arab and Muslim world. Unfortunately, the Muslims have a religion which is oriented towards using carnal weapons against their opponents, so it's much easier to manipulate Muslims than it is to manipulate Christians, although we have so few authentic Christians these days that I suppose in some ways it's become just as easy in either culture.
Well, are you kidding? A lot of these white Anglo, quote, Zionists, I mean, you'll hear them say, nuke all the Arabs, murder everyone, kill all their children, kill anyone who disagrees with the government and our holy jihad against the jihadis. They've lost all their soul. Don't you idiots know that if the government will nuke Muslims, they'll take your bank account? Don't you know they can kill, the videos, hundreds of them, of our troops shooting Iraqi children for fun and shooting dogs, and our citizens don't care about the Iraqi kids, they cry about the dogs, showing how far we've fallen. Doesn't the public know that if evil is allowed to be perpetrated against somebody else, it can happen to you? I mean, don't they understand how that works?
Yeah, there's definitely been a process of dehumanization, and as you say, if we're dehumanizing these other people, then we're simply setting ourselves up to be dehumanized as well.
Exactly. Think how big these hit teams are that are already here. They have hundreds of thousands of troops, and tens of thousands have been involved in massacres, and they just sit there on the side of the road in Baghdad, shooting cars full of women and children falling out dead, laughing. I mean, it's not even at a checkpoint. They just say, watch this, playing Elvis music and shoot families and laugh.
And Blackwater, as you know, has been implicated in that. And the headline in our North Idaho newspaper was yesterday that Blackwater may open a chapter in North Idaho because we have a lot of retired policemen, firemen, and military up here. And, of course, I take my hat off to all genuine public servants who really have protected us from crime and things like that. But when you have that kind of military mentality where the government is right and they forget what George Washington and Thomas Jefferson argued for and shed their blood for, then you have these mercenary groups coming in, which is basically, as you know, what we're operating in the Middle East is a mercenary army.
Well, that's why day one, a private gets $30,000 a year, a sergeant gets $50,000, $60,000 a year, a colonel gets $1 million a year. It's unknown what the generals get, but they fly in hundreds of billions on giant pallets per year and publicly handed out off record to the troops, but that's meant to corrupt them. That's meant to get them ready for clandestine black ops. And now they're not professional hitmen in some cases. They're so bloodthirsty that I've seen the reports in major papers, and I've seen video of it, where there'll be a mother walking with a child, not the 50 cal at, you know, 500 yards, and they'll place bets on, can I shoot her in the head? And then her head will explode, and then the child, mother falls over with the hand, you know, and then just spraying and shooting and taking puppies and murdering them. I mean, it's just like, death, evil, I mean, that's mind control. And now I want to get into that, because I want to take calls, but we can't just go for 10 hours here. I mean, you've done so many other subjects. In fact, let me punch your website up here in front of me. I mean, there's so many. I just had it up here on my browser. Let me find it.
And that's revisionisthistory.org.
Yeah, for some reason it's not in my browser. Punch it up here on the screen for me, guys. Because I want to go through different subjects now quickly that you also cover, not just one of the big subjects.
But one of the things that you mentioned there, Alex, with that violence and the way that it does damage to Jesus Christ and the gospel, because obviously Satan does not want the gospel to spread, doesn't want people to be saved, is we have so many ministers and even Catholic priests, for that matter, who become neocons, who are preaching this war doctrine. They're cheering on the massacres. And the people of the world look on this and they figure, well, these are the public spokesmen for Jesus Christ. This must be what Jesus Christ represents. And yet Jesus Christ said, love your enemies, do good to them that persecute you. And the only violence that is allowed to a Christian, it's not actually violence, but taking up of arms, is the police power that the Apostle Paul spoke about, that the ruler bears not the sword in vain to protect our borders, to protect our women from rape, to punish kidnappers. But we're not allowed, as we've done throughout history, as these secret agents have talked us into, where one Christian nation fights another Christian nation, and the minister gets up in one pulpit and says God's on our side, the other minister says he's on their side. You had Catholic priests holding masses for the French army, opposed to Spanish priests holding masses for their army. This is all a scandalization of the gospel, and it diminishes the stature of Jesus Christ in the world, and I think that's the most satanic aspect of all of these wars, that we have Christian ministers and priests and politicians implicated in their
actions. But again, anything is going to be used throughout history. It always is. Okay, now I want to get into the regime of Queen Elizabeth I's ideological template for the Masonic Imperium and the intelligence agencies of the West, and how that ties into Twilight language, the command and control argot of the cryptocracy, the alchemical processing of humanity via psychodrama embedded in ritual crimes, which we just saw on a high satanic holy day with the murder of Gene Palfrey yesterday. Let's go through that before I go to calls. I want to cover this giant area.
I hope you don't want me to do it all in 10 minutes.
No, but I mean, let's get into it.
Yeah, well, with Queen Elizabeth, we briefly touched on her regime last time, and whenever, rule of thumb is, whenever you're looking for this occult technology, you want to begin with the intelligence agencies, because that's typically where they're harbored. And last time I was on your program, Alex, we talked about Dr. John Dee, astrologer royal to Queen Elizabeth I, and with Edward Kelly, he was involved in necromancy and an occult process called scrying. He was also a legitimate mathematician in his own right. And his code name, and this will send everybody into orbit when they hear what it was, his code name in the Elizabethan cryptocracy was 007. And this is the original paradigm of 007. In fact, people who are in the know on historians of intelligence agencies in the West have remarked upon the fact that the best, most efficient, treacherous, and deadliest of all the secret police forces in the West have been the British intelligence, MI5 and MI6, and along with Mossad, of course, and all the rest of them from the CIA and the KGB downward are just pale imitations compared to that. Well, why did they have this power and how did they get it? In this particular case, John Dee was very much a Kabbalist. He was fascinated with the Kabbalah, and last time we talked about how the Renaissance Roman Catholics and the Renaissance Anglicans began to import these Pharisaic ideas into Christendom when the Christians had done such a good job throughout the Middle Ages of keeping these ideas out, and then they entered in the Renaissance. And John Dee was obsessed with the Kabbalah. He felt it was the key to the very highest forms of magic and control of populations and nations. And so back in the 16th century, he made the very difficult journey out to Prague, where he saw Rabbi Judah Lowe. Now, I must say this is conjecture. I cannot absolutely document that he per se met with Judah Lowe. He was in occult Bohemia at that time. It would be very hard for me to believe that someone as well connected as he was going into Prague and not meeting with Rabbi Judah Lowe. But so far we have not gotten the smoking gun on the actual meeting itself, so I can't produce letters or diaries that attest to that. However, the key books which would have that information, they're not even extant in the British libraries. One of them has been burned up. You can see the copy, and it's been heavily burned. The others have been lost. But one thing we do know, and we need to go by what people practice. That was Jesus' rule of thumb. What are by their fruits you'll know them. And so what are the fruits of John Dee? After he returned from Prague, he was filled with this Kabbalistic gnosis. So if he didn't actually meet with Rabbi Judah Lowe, who, by the way, is associated with the mystical golem, the idea of getting the brainless goyim, and getting that, which is what they call the other nations of the world, and getting them to march to your tune, that was actually a philosophical meme or virus of Rabbi Judah Lowe. So whether or not Dee actually met with him, he certainly picked up the virus and brought it back to Great Britain, where he invented the concept of British Israel, which was a secret teaching that the people of Europe were actually descended from the 10 tribes. Now, I actually tend to believe that there is something to that, and just because John Dee advocated it, or the Kabbalists and the rabbis were trying to twist or distort it.
And by the way, that then energizes much of the modern Nazism and those groups. They all believe that as well.
Well, I have found that most neo-Nazis are very dismissive of British Israel because they're dismissive of the Old Testament, as Adolf Hitler was. Adolf Hitler was basically convinced by the occultists that he dealt with in the Thule Society and the roots of the Thule Society that there was this Manichaean split between the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's the heresy of Marcion, where you believe that Jesus was a New Testament figure and that this terrible Yahweh was this demonic figure of the Old Testament. The big problem with that is that Jesus quotes the Old Testament numerous times. As
sure, and he says, "I'm here to fulfill the whole of the law."
Sure, yeah.
But so I mean, let's go back though. That's interesting. Tell me about, from your research, I mean, I've done my own, the type of occultism that Hitler was following.
Well, one of the key aspects of seeing how Hitler was controlled is when you see that when he had state power over the publications of Germany, there's two key indicators for me. Is one is the very best Talmud that had ever been published in Germany, the Talmud of Lazarus Goldschmidt, was published in Nazi Germany while Hitler was the supreme leader. It's a 12-volume series. The last book was published in 1936. Publication began in 1929, and Hitler did not interdict the publication of the Talmud. But even more telling than that is, when Hitler had the focus of the Germanic peoples of the world on him and on his ideology, and he had a just a golden opportunity to teach people, what did he hold up for them to learn in terms of advising them about what the inner nature of Zionism, communism, and Judaism was? The protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Now, I don't want to get into debating the provenance of it, but Alex, at the very least, we can say that it is very much in dispute. Now, whenever I say this, I get mail from people, and they're trying to prove to me that the protocols is real, and I say, look, whether it's real or it's not, and I personally do not believe that it is authentic, but whether it is or it's
not. Yeah, it's written in comic book fashion.
Exactly. And there are a couple of key points, because I believe the Russian secret police had a good handle. The Russians were probably among the very best students of the rabbis, and they understood rabbinic knowledge. To this day, the Russians are very alert to the Talmud. And to
well, they have the oldest Quran, too, and just shipped a golden copy to Saudi Arabia. So they're, yeah, a lot of scholarship going on.
And so here Hitler holds up the protocols, has it reprinted, when one of the greatest German scholars of all time, Johann Andreas Eisenmenger, in 1700 had written a book, Entdecktes Judentum. and it was about Judaism. It was a two-volume master key into Judaism, which Samuel Wertheimer and Oppenheimer, the financiers of the Holy Roman Empire at that time, had that book suppressed. And Eisenmenger had studied with rabbis for 20 years before he wrote the book. And Hitler could have commissioned a republication of the book. And it, there's still more details in that. Most Germans are not interested in it. I haven't been able to get Germans very interested in it. Our publishing company came out with an English version of it. You can find it at Amazon.com under Traditions of the Jews by Eisenmenger. But it's a one-volume abridgment by a Huguenot minister named Stellan in the 18th century. It's not the complete book, but it's the best that we could do. But that's really the master key to Judaism. What does Hitler do? He reprints the protocols and ignores Eisenmenger. Of course, Eisenmenger was a pious Lutheran scholar. There was nothing racist about him, nothing that you or I would object to. It would have been a benefaction to humanity if to reprint of that book, and he didn't do it. It's just one of a number of factors that you can see in Hitler's outlook and his attitude of the extirpation and extrusion of the Judaics from Europe, which has been, I mean, he's really the original $6 million man for the state of Israel. If it wasn't for him, the Israeli state would have never come into being. It was as a result of sympathy.
...of persecution. But then I get people telling me Hitler wasn't into the occult. He was a nice guy. I mean, you could just look at the guy. But then all of the speeches I've read, I've listened to old audio recordings and translations. I mean, and the things they did and the people they shook down and the, how, I mean, just all of it to say that, you know, this is a good guy. It just shows the sickening delusional nature of so many people. Now, we've got the final segment of the main radio show. We're going to do about 20 minutes of overdrive. I really want to get into Twilight Language, the Sub Rosa Command and Control, our God of the cryptocracy. There is no doubt they're following this. There's no doubt they're pulling games and doing all sorts of bizarre things. I want to talk about that during this InfoWars.com segment. On the InfoWars.com streams, they'll be able to listen to the next 3 minutes. We'll come back in the final segment, and I got a few sponsors I'm going to plug. Then we're going to come back and go into some other subjects and your phone calls at 512-646-5400, and we'll be leaving the network in about 10 minutes. I want to thank them for the great work they've done. If you want to continue listening, there's one place, the internet at InfoWars.com. Okay, boy, this time has just blasted past us. Let's get into defining what Twilight Language is. Give us the basics of that, and then get into some examples of its implementation and usage.
Well, I think, Alex, one of the reasons why our people are so passive right now, there's an eerie silence out in the hinterland. You know, Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill, was part of the bombing of Serbia, where Christian churches and monasteries were destroyed, supposedly to liberate Kosovo. And if something like that had been done to, by an American president to, say, downtown Tel Aviv, as was done to Belgrade, you can be sure that if his wife was then running for president, everywhere he or his wife went around the United States, they would have encountered a crowd of angry Tel Aviv residents who said, "Look what you did, firebombing our town." But we don't see crowds of Serbian Christians.
With depleted uranium, they didn't just blow up everything.
But we don't see Serbian Christians following around Mr. and Mrs. Clinton, and I'm not advocating any violence here, but just asking them tough questions, protest and picket signs. There's this incredible apathy on the part of our people, and I believe it's been instilled, and it's instilled in a number of ways. Twilight Language is one of them. And Twilight Language is basically a way to talk over our heads directly to our subconscious. And one of the movies, it's kind of R-rated, so I don't recommend it for people under the age of 18. Kids shouldn't see it, you know, but mature adults can see it. It's called They Live. And in the movie They Live, for some reason, the director mentioned that the glasses that you can put on to decode the subliminal Twilight Language are called the Hoffman lenses. And to this day, I don't know whether he was a fan of my book or it's just a synchronicity. But that movie brings out some of the aspects, but of course it's a lot more technical than that. But the idea is that you implant in people certain key words. I'll give you one of them, wicker. Okay, wicker, you were talking about the Druids at the start of the program, and wicker has to do with the historic method of immolation of a ritual victim. You put him inside of a wicker basket, and something like that goes on at the Burning Man Rite in Nevada every year there out at Black Rock. And I think Black Rock, even that word is symbolic. But
the sacrificial stone, and of course, most of the people there don't know what it is, but go ahead.
Yeah, and so in our subconscious, it's my theory, based on information, for example, from Dr. Carl Gustav Jung. And,
well, there's no doubt that there are these pre-programmed, almost ancestral memories. Now, I'm not saying a reincarnation, folks. I mean, pre-programmed, like you know, why do kids afraid of the dark? Why do they want to be near you at night so a big cat doesn't come in the cave and eat them? There's these basic instincts. Go ahead.
Yeah, you and I don't believe in reincarnation. The Orthodox rabbis do, of course, and it's unbelievable that Christians...
I tell you, we're coming back. We're coming back. Recap that now. I got to plug some things and recap it. We'll start the extra hour, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. You want to be able to watch the video of this live TV / radio show, become a PrisonPlanet.tv member. 15 cents a day, all my films, my book, Paul Watson's book, hundreds of only TV reports, 4+ years in operation. PrisonPlanet.tv, 15 cents a day. Get all the books and videos we carry at Infowars.com, like Washington, You're Fired, or American Drug War. We hit it from every different angle, every different facet to get you to think, to get outside the box and to really question reality, and that we should all be tolerant of each other and work together and just be scholars but also be active. Before we go back to Mr. Hoffman with amazing information, and who knows how long he can stay with us. I might keep him for another hour if he can do it. Listen, but I've got to get home and do some other work. I've hardly been home this week. I've been working so much. But we've got working for the Raptors. I got two new films coming out. I think the film that I'm just about to complete is the best I've ever made. It was really meant to be just a quick film. It's a real sleeper. Wait till you see it. But I'm already digressing there. I want to tell you about some of our sponsors, and one of those is Aloe's. And folks, Aloe's is just one of the many products that New Vitality have and New Vitality carry. It's a big established company. They don't have magic claims or baloney like these stupid ads that, you know, claim that crystals will heal you or whatever. This is just, you know, really good stuff that's known to flush you out. And aloe vera really does do it. It's concentrated aloe vera tablets. And it's just a really way to get detoxed. New Vitality, that's one of their products. 1-800-569-4056. 1-800-569-4056. Aloe's colon and body cleanse. They have super beta prostate. A lot of men have prostate problems with all the chemicals and stuff in our diet. These are well-known herbs that shrink the prostate and make it healthy. A lot of this stuff's even doctor-recommended now. They know these herbs are very well-designed by God and really work well. 1-800-569-4056 or check out the banner to New Vitality at Infowars.com. And again, please get my books, my videos, the material I put out. That's how we finance our operation. I'm getting a bigger office. I'm going to try to hire more people, do a better job, maybe get some other folks to do TV programs in the morning and at night with a nice setup, get on a cable channel that isn't as expensive as you think. But we need the funds to do that. And again, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. Buy the books and videos there. Watch the films online at PrisonPlanet.tv. Or you can simply expand on that. Having a PrisonPlanet.tv membership, you can make copies of all my films, burn them to disc, the audios, the videos. Every day we take the hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. The show can be as long as I want now. I love it. The freedom. And then we take however much TV we did during that period, sometimes an hour, always an hour. You know, we always at least do an hour, but sometimes it can be 4 hours. And then that is uploaded each day within a few hours for PrisonPlanet.tv members to watch it when you want, how you want, where you want. But I am going to start a fifth hour of Overdrive, and I, you know what? I'm just going to do 30 minutes. I'm going to respect Mr. Hoffman's time, and I respect my own time and your time. So we're going to come back, try to get more into this whole Masonic system and the whole British angle on it, the Britannic angle, and then Twilight language. Let's get into that first. Amazing, very, very important with Mr. Hoffman when we start the next hour. But I want to officially start that next hour coming in with the intro, so we'll go to Mr. Hoffman in one moment. Right now, though, I need to let Mr. Hoffman know we need to call him back on his number. So, John, will you please IM that number to my producer in Austin? And, Mr. Hoffman, we will call you back in 60 seconds. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine, Alex.
Okay, and then we can have you for 30 minutes, correct?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to call you on our number now. We're going to talk about 15 minutes. Then we'll take 15 minutes of calls from Josh, Will, Kyle, Eric, Todd, and others. The radio show continues. I want to thank all the AMFM affiliates, Troy affiliates, Main Satellite. We'll say bye-bye to you now. Back to, Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. live for another syndicated show. But the Internet TV show continues now at InfoWars.com. You'll need to go to those audio streams right now to be able to hear us, InfoWars.com, or watch us at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCN Live.
Take care, Jones. We'll see you on Monday.
John, now, John, fabulous job. Thank you,
sir. Thank you. Have a nice weekend.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Eugenics dominated the 20th century. Its ruthless spirit has now metastasized into the fields of genetics.
Houston's given us clearance here at Cape Canaveral. We're go launch into overdrive, commercial free, for the next 30 minutes. My wife's going to kill me if I don't stop doing 5, 6, 8-hour radio shows. I tell you, I do this because I love it. But I just have always smelled a New World Order operation in and around just going after certain groups of people. Because that actually empowers the New World Order. All right, I want to move quickly through Twilight Language, the Sub Rosa, Command and Control, our God of the Cryptocracy. Then we'll go to these loaded phone lines for Michael Hoffman, our guest, who is a former AP writer, best-selling author, researcher, calls himself a revisionist historian. Let's go back to our guest. Mr. Hoffman, break it down for us.
Yes, I'm wondering if, just before I do, Alex, if I could brief people on our website and the publications. Is that okay?
Oh, sure, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're all going to visit it and brief themselves, but go ahead.
So we're at www.revisionisthistory.org, and the book that I'm finishing up now is Judaism Discovered. It should be available, and we should be mailing it out in July, but we'll be having a pre-publication sale probably at the beginning of June. So if people stay on our mailing list and stay with us, they can get $5 or $6 off the price on that. And that's really everything that I've got. I've put into that book. I've been writing it for a year, researching it for the last 8 years. And that's
and again, this is all the rage, Madonna, everything else. We're just looking at it. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. And so our address is Independent History, P.O. Box 849, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83816, and the website is revisionisthistory.org. And we were talking about Twilight Language, and Alex and I were discussing Wicker as being one of the command words. Earlier in the previous show that I did, I talked about how people are aware that Egypt involves, the ancient Egyptians in Pharaonic Egypt involves archaeoastronomy and the mystical toponymy of that area, the ley lines and how the statuary is laid out. But very few people know the emphasis that the Egyptians put on the use of words, words of power, which Freemasonry is also aware of. The Freemasons have a symbolic figure they call Dr. Syntax, and they have him lecturing at Freemasons Hall, which is the tip-off that there are these key words. And, of course, every Mason knows that there are phrases and secret passwords, are you on the level, we meet on the square, many of those having been part of the regular argot of Americans. So ubiquitous was the influence of Freemasonry in the 20th century. This goes a little bit deeper than that because we're talking about an attempt to speak to our unconscious or dreaming mind, which is awake when we are asleep. But so many people are awake or are asleep even when they're awake, and I think probably some of you driving on the highways and freeways will be aware of that with people with their cell phones and all these distractions. But the point of a magician, of course, to work his illusion is to draw our attention away from the real trick. And so much of what the cryptocracy Alex is involved in today is misdirection. And in the meanwhile, they salt our media, our public relations with these key words, which are intended to instill in us amnesia apathy and abulia. Abulia means lack of will, and we certainly see all three.
And let me just throw this in. They also do things, and there's many levels and facets, but as George Orwell said, destroying the language, reducing it. They'll call someone who murders 55 children with a bomb a extremist, which is a or a radical, which is a term that doesn't describe a cold-blooded murderer of a piece of filth, you know, a terrorist. They will ascribe a word, prescribe a word that is not as serious to something serious, so they can then use it to people who aren't even, quote, extreme, but now it has the mental idea that, oh my God, this person's a murdering terrorist. That way they can call you an extremist and not get sued when they're really calling you a murdering killer. I mean, see all those little mind games they play?
Yeah, language is really the key of it, and who controls the language, for example, how the word the neologism Holocaust was introduced into our vocabulary. Prior to the late 1960s, early 70s, most people talked about the genocide, as Raphael Lemkin coined it, which was also a neologism, or they just referred to the 6 million. And suddenly this term Holocaust, which means burnt offering, was being applied to people who did not die generally by fire, as it's alleged, but they died allegedly by gas.
But see how that is a sacrifice, which they believe by funding Hitler and letting him do all that, then that's the excuse. And of course, you report that you do believe Hitler did kill a lot of people and Jews, according to what I've read your writings, which obviously is accurate. The number can be debated, which again is the burnt offering to set up Israel. But continue with words. I mean, continue with lots of words and then this twilight language. I mean, break that down, that definition.
Yeah, well, twilight language, if you look on the internet and search around for twilight language, you're either going to bump into my research or you're going to bump into a technical term that's used in Buddhist and Tantric and Hindu manuscripts to talk about the concealment of texts which are not allowed for initiates to access. But twilight language, as used in that Buddhist Hindu context, does not really involve manipulation of the unconscious or dreaming mind. It's a little bit there in Tantra, but mostly it's a technical term for how texts are concealed, which is of interest to me in my study of Judaism, because one of the theses that I bring out in my new book is that even some of the texts in the Talmud were deliberately planted there in case Gentiles penetrated through the Aramaic, began to understand and got access to the text. But we'll leave that for another time or for when my book is published. But in this peculiar case of twilight language in the West, Alex, that's the manipulation of archetypes. And I want to give you an example because I think that's the best way for people to understand it.
Darth Vader, how our police now dress, and then a police chief in a major city saying they wear it to intimidate us. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, that's part of it. And that would be more the language of symbolism rather than the verbum.
But a verb brings up a mental image.
Yes, that's right.
So it's all interconnected.
It triggers it, sure. And so as we were talking when we were on the national radio there, we were talking about how Wicker is related to the ancient pre-Christian Northern European means of immolation for ritual sacrifice, which was to put a man in, put someone into a large anthropomorphic, that is to say, man-shaped wicker basket and set it on fire. And then we were talking about how there were parallels between that and the Burning Man rituals that are done out in the Nevada desert at Black Rock. But if we look at wicker, and again, people can do an internet search or they can do this research on their own to see how much the wicker is associated with the occult and associated with ritual murder. And when I was part of the regular establishment media, one of the stories that I was covering was the Son of Sam murders, which I'm sure you'll recall with the Son of Sam cult. David Berkowitz was the patsy.
Yeah, going around shooting people.
Yeah, he terrorizing New York with these very occult letters, which were not written by David Berkowitz. They weren't in his handwriting. He wasn't capable intellectually of writing them, and he now admits that himself. Unfortunately, Maury Terry, the lead investigator on that, has muddied the waters in certain significant ways, which is very unfortunate because about 90% of his book is correct and then 10% is misdirection. But the Son of Sam called himself Wicked King Wicker for absolutely no reason. In the letters to Jimmy Breslin, which were subsequently publicized across the nation, first in the New York Daily News and later in Newsweek and Time and CBS and so forth, this name, Wicked King Wicker, came to be associated with the most electrifying ritual serial murder theories really of that era, the Son of Sam thing. If you talk to native New Yorkers who were living in Manhattan or any one of the five boroughs at that time, they feared Son of Sam, and they began to associate subconsciously Wicker with Son of Sam. And I followed this Wicker trail, and they use it. They use it later on. There was a movie set in Chicago, and it was on ritual murder, and brought in this Wicker thing for absolutely no reason at all. So it's clear that they want to associate the ancient connotations of Wicker with the modern. And what's the message? What's the message of the Twilight language? What they're saying is that these aren't just random murders by lone nuts, even though consciously that's what we're telling you. Officially, we're telling you this. Unofficially, in the shadow side, in the mirror side, we're telling you something else. Now, in the old days, when we were a hardy, vigorous, alert people, things like that would get people angry, they would get them curious, they would start investigating, and they'd do something about it. There'd be arrests, there'd be prosecutions, you know. Nowadays, the way we've been dumbed down, the way our will has been taken from us, all this does is to continue to murder our minds. The more we see their control, the more we stand in awe of them, and we don't actually act. As far as I'm concerned, Charles Harrelson is very likely one of the men who assassinated John Fitzgerald Kennedy on November 22nd in Dallas. Charles Harrelson is in a federal prison. There should be.
Well, he actually died just a few months ago. You may not have known that. And of course, that's Woody Harrelson's dad, and he was convicted for shooting a federal judge in San Antonio at 400 yards with a .243 in the neck. And we know he did hits all over the world. And the Dallas Times Herald, now defunct, has famous photos of him being brought out with the tramps. He was one of the guys, and it's Charles Harrelson. Go ahead.
So he died a couple of months ago. Yes, that's news to me. And when I confronted Woody Harrelson with this, because I had seen that he had made the statement that his father was a CIA agent, and I had also heard that when Charles Harrelson was arrested for the murder of the federal judge, he said, "You can't touch me, I killed Kennedy." And so I was able to arrange a meeting with Woody Harrelson, and he's an environmental activist.
No, I know Woody. I'm in a movie with him. I've hung out with him.
Okay,
nice
right.
Fella.
Well, I don't know whether you asked him this question or
no,
not.
No, I mean, I was saying, yes, I know he's really into the environment. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so I felt that this was an opportunity given to me by God to encourage Woody to get his father to speak so that any perpetrators who are still alive we can bring to justice, because that's where I'm at.
You know, when he died right, it was actually about almost a year ago now. It was right when the Rolling Stone came out. You know, I've had St. John Hunt, the son of the famous CIA section chief, CIA block op commander E. Howard Hunt, with all the tapes. We've even got video that we need to go ahead and get on the web. It's so dangerous, but the audio's already out of him saying how he ran the operation to kill Kennedy, but go ahead.
See, what's happening is so, in other words, I could have just gotten Woody's autograph, and like a lot of your listeners, I'm interested in natural foods, and we could have discussed that. But I threw all that away in order to take the opportunity to confront him about his dad, and all he basically did was start crying, and he got very angry, and that ended the whole interview there. It's obviously a very sore subject with him.
Yeah, you don't bring it up to him.
But, well, you have to, because, you know, he wants to better the world. What could be more betterment of the world than to solve this mystery and bring this horrible octopus that's behind the killing of this president to justice? And that's really what I feel we should all be involved in. Now, maybe, my way isn't your way or another individual's way, but each of us have to be involved in a practical application of this. And what I see, Alex, is that the conspiracy movement, the study of the occult, it's become a thrill-seeking movement. It seems to be that the vast majority of the people involved are no longer actually trying to bring perpetrators to justice. They're actually part of an occult roller coaster ride, which continues to dish out various revelations to them, because they're basically almost as dead as Frankenstein monster in the modern world. They sit in traffic for 2 hours, they commute home, they eat dead food when they get home, switch on the boob tube, and and the occult, the study of these mysteries, is kind of like an electric shock to Frankenstein's monster.
No. Listen, I love that analogy. Everything's so dead, everything's a lie, so the truth is like a moth to a flame, but you don't want to get burned by it, and the leadership of it is everyone saying, only I have the answer, and you're all scum. I always work with everyone, but most people, there's very few quality people at the higher levels. I think you're a quality gentleman person, very intelligent, but I've tried to reach a hand out to so many who always backstab me or flip out or say I'm covering up something when I have everybody on, basically. But I mean, more than that, it's like a money-making thing. And I don't mean just to have an office and operate and make films. I mean, they're really, you know, I refuse the magic rite machines and all the crap pyramids and all the magic cures and all these other things. You know, like other people, they accept it because they love the power. They're also mad as conspiracy leaders that I'm the big fish and really hate me. I've experienced it where I could care less about crowds and people, and I wish at many levels I never would have done this. And I'm a very private person, and I don't need ego because I already, you know, am self-confident, you know, myself. But yes, I know a very sick movement, but at the top it's sick, like everything else. In the middle and the bottom, it's great people waking up. Some people, it's like entertainment and funny and, ooh, look at this, and that's why they always get into the next thing, the UFO, the chupacabra, the turkey monster, the Loch Ness monster, the aliens, because it is a thrill-seeking voyeurism, and then it strays off the path. I always try to stay in the reality. Do you see the points I'm making?
Yes, and I think that that's important to make those distinctions, because it can be a kind of infotainment and just a thrill ride, and that's very deadening because, Alex, the cryptocracy is not static. They move us from stage to stage in their human processing.
It's like downloads. They give us the new download. You can even see the new info. We're now moving into the phase of artificial scarcity, cutting off water, cutting off food, tripling, quadrupling the bureaucrats, micromanaging.
Scarcity is a very important model to impose on people because it's part of spreading fear. You know, Charlie Manson talked about the need to spread the fear, and that he picked that up from the cryptocracy itself. And the only thing we are to be afraid of is God. If anyone tries to get you to be afraid of anything else other than God, you're dealing with a Pied Piper right there. And
they say the beginning of knowledge is fear of God. That means the beginning of fearing the devil is the beginning of ignorance. I tell people, be afraid of not living a full life. Be afraid of not having honor and courage. Be afraid of not fighting evil. Be afraid of letting it win. Be afraid of not charging out on the field and engaging the enemy. You know, be afraid of not being the, you know, the creature you should have been. And you better be afraid of not fighting this corruption. We better be afraid they're gonna, you know, people say I try to create fear. It's the opposite. I'm trying to empower people, and I'm trying to say scary things are going to happen if you do not get involved. You see that difference there?
Because if they ever really saw a revolution developing, or as soon as they even begin to see an inkling or a harbinger of it, they go to Fox News and they get a fear factor going. You know, we found a bomb on an airplane, or you know, we've shut down the
but
New York
but
subway.
But they're not invincible, Mr. Hoffman.
No, they're not.
Let me just add, we took the mechanism of government-sponsored terror. I saw that 12 years ago as their key nexus point, problem, reaction, solution, as many others inherently did. I have been exposing government-sponsored terror since 1997 in film. And I continue to try to take that mechanism and destroy it, break it, have a renaissance, an awakening, an understanding, an enlightenment to problem, reaction, solution, whether it's fake water shortages or fake terror. And I also see fear as a healthy thing if it's based in reality of why are you scared of a cliff? Because your body instinctively, that archetype of that cliff, is telling you this is danger, Will Robinson, step back. I mean, more in the fear, be afraid of not following God's law, God's commandments. That is fear of God, because if you don't, you'll be destroyed. Do you see the point I'm making?
Yes. And the phase that we're in now, Alex, and I bring this out in my book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, is the making manifest of all that is hidden, the revelation of the method, which I learned from my mentor, James Shelby Downard, who had studied the alchemical manuscripts and came across this term. It's very unusual. It's unprecedented in the history of the conspiracy. And because what we have previous to this time is concealment. They always tightly and closely guarded their top secrets. And, of course, they continue to do so today.
I want to see if you agree with me. They have to have revelation of the method because they believe the new age is here where they will exterminate 80-plus percent of the earth. They have to have everyone ready to accept it. The horrors that are coming, they have to have us ready. And so it's also a conditioning, like you said, a deadening, to hear all this and then to just kind of marvel at the beast, as you did on the Isle of Patmos, as they rush over you, kind of seeing it come on like a deer in the headlights.
Yes, very important point raised in Arthur C. Clarke's novel Childhood's End, where that point is brought out. The old cooking the frog idea of this process of gradualism and then accommodating us to a greater and greater evil. But see, the evil is just not exterior. It's also in us. It's in our interior.
Well, let me ask you, why do you think they're now finally revealing everything?
Because it's a form of mind control. It's whenever anybody gets the truth, they're under obligation to do something with it. The truth is not a hobby. The truth, God didn't give us the truth. He hasn't set it out in front of us so that it
You're right. If we don't do something about it, it is then acquiescence to it, and then we then become accomplices after the fact.
Exactly. If I have time, very quickly, an example. If you went next door, and this is all hypothetical, I didn't even know you were married until I heard you refer to your wife, so this is strictly hypothetical, but if you went next door to your neighbor's house and they were showing home movies from their trip to Jamaica or Hawaii or whatever, and very briefly, out of the corner of your eye, for 1 second in the movie, it showed your wife in the embrace of your neighbor. And, you know, you weren't sure that you saw it, and your neighbor's a great guy, and your wife's a great woman, so you just sort of subliminally just push it out and say, oh, I must be tired or something. And then you watch the whole movie for another 5 minutes, and you see that image again, only it's not 1 second, it's 2 seconds. Now you're pretty sure you saw it. You ask your friend to run it back. It's not in there again. You go home. You start to investigate a little bit. You see evidence that, again, this is hypothetical, that your wife was committing adultery. Okay. Now you're under obligation. You have a truth that's been placed in front of you. Now, do you do something about it? Do you call her out on it?
Or do you willfully double think and crime stop and decide to ignore it? Now you have to go along with her having orgies in front of you and denying it, which is why they show torture on TV and why CBS on purpose showed lower levels of the torture, was to get people to then say, oh, it's no big deal, and now you've accepted the rape of children. Now you've gone straight to hell.
Exactly. You've got it right
Your
there.
Your journey towards the dark side is now complete.
The movie Videodrome showed that people were going to be getting doses of sadomasochistic television and that those doses were going to create a change in their brain and in their mind. A movie done by David Cronenberg, I believe, in the late 1980s, and now it's come true in front of us because we are not acting. Now, when people say, well, Mr. Hoffman, what do you mean by act? Do you want us to go out and riot? Or, well, I can give you one example. I can see
Stop watching television. Don't let your children watch it. I've got a video.
The longshoremen on the West Coast yesterday, the union there, not from the union heads, but from the grassroots, stopped all loading of boats to protest the Iraq war. If we could have that across the United States,
that's what they're worried about.
Is
spontaneous, and you know this archetypal sixth sense thing works both ways. I think that we can say they're letting it. You know, we're letting them bring it out. I think a lot of the reason they're bringing it out now, and I think they rationalize they're delusional too. They are letting a lot of this come out now because they can't stop it anyways. You know, I think they knew the net would bring some of it out, but not this bad. I mean, now they're wanting to clamp down on it. I don't think they're God and all-powerful. I think they're going to get their butt kicked.
Oh, certainly they want to control the information, and they reveal it in increments. Certainly they oppose me. There's a very heavy boycott on me, both on the left and the right. We get interference all the time financially. There's sabotage of our website. Every dirty trick in the book is being done to silence me, and probably you've had some of that treatment as well.
Well, what you do is every time they attack you, you just start an extra website. Get like 5-10, and go, oh, thank you, you attacked. I mean, that's my rule. I'm drawing a picture for the viewers out there, and you can pull these graphs up. They're all pretty similar. But basically, you get 1950. Okay, you got the 40s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and on. And as TV popularizes, you know, as television gets into homes, you see a immediate spike. You know, In fact, I guess they're not putting it on screen. Okay. Here's the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. You can go pull these graphs up. This is just a kind of a guesstimation or a... what's the term when you're not quoting someone exactly?
Approximation.
Yeah, an approximation, or it's a... when you say, I'm not quoting...
Oh, you mean a paraphrase.
A paraphrase, yeah. I mean, you can go pull the graphs up, but like the 40s TV starts, late 40s. By early 1950s, it's very popular. And then you get almost total television watching by then. Then as they show violence on TV, it just skyrockets. Violence just absolutely skyrockets as they show violence on television. So you get television, and then as soon as you get television, violence just skyrockets as they show you the television. That's the video drone. That's what Cronenberg's saying.
Well, that's right, and also we have to realize that it's happening on the Internet. I mean, the Internet is a great source of alternative information up to a point. I still encourage people to get a classical education and to read part of a book every day besides their regular Bible reading, but there's nothing like confronting a text in the quiet of your home for the contemplation, meditation, and the edification of your mind. I'm still a 19th century print reactionary when it comes to the utility of the printed
word. Oh, yeah, I'm rereading Cooper's Last of the Mohicans. That's hard to put down at 2 a.m.
That's good. And so one of the things I want to warn people about the Internet is if you've got any kids in the house, any teenagers, anybody younger than that, the pornography is free access, and if you don't have a super strong filter on there and the software is available, and somebody said, well, what if my kid is a hacker and he hacks into it? Well, then I guess you'll have to get rid of the Internet.
Well, see, there's any rationalization to not even do basic controls. Well, I mean, I let my children play a few games on the computer, like drawing games and things, but I just don't let them on it unless I'm there.
Right, because if you don't have the filter on there, they're going to lose their innocence in about 90 seconds. They can be 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. They're going to see the rawest, most hardcore pornography.
And by the way, people think, the devil's advertised as a hot woman in red with horns, you know, the naked devil archetypal rockabilly image, and it's so much fun and cool. Really, as you lose your innocence, you lose the delicate perception of the walls of reality. And so innocence is actually more advanced. As you become more worldly, it's actually like your feelers have been seared and burnt off. I mean, I feel like I've gone through hell and back and lost a lot of my humanity just plumbing, studying the New World Order. Do you see the point I'm making?
Yes, it's a special apostolate, and you have to have a special grace from God to do it, because people like you and I who are involved in this area of study have to be very careful that we maintain our own mental equilibrium and our spiritual connection.
I have to be honest, all the time I just feel myself becoming evil.
But I think that it's important that your listeners know that there's a point where they've received all the information they need to have, and they need to begin to organize as those longshoremen did. And you notice, Alex, how little media play that wonderful spontaneous grassroots protest.
I didn't know.
Yeah, and well, they don't want us to know, because the next thing you know, the Association of Retired Old Ladies will be taking their cars to the gas station, parking them, and walking away. I mean, that's the kind of message where Bush and these other Satanists, these skull and bonesers, really thrive, is when we give them our consent through our silence. And again, it has to be a proper form of protest. It has to be something that is not carnal, but spiritual.
Okay, listen, I'm going to rampage through a bunch of calls. We've had you here with us for 2 hours, 10 minutes, and I don't want to abuse too much more of your time, and I got about 10 calls for you. Each caller gets 1 minute, folks. We got to move fast. But in closing, for my questions, Bush, I think they put that doddering crazy man in there just to destroy the image of the presidency, to make America look bad worldwide while we do the globalist dirty work. In fact, I know they did that. But just to see him, I mean, he is a literal pit demon incarnate. It's so obvious. How could people not see that?
I agree. It seems obvious to me, but spiritual blindness is one of the first things that people get infected with when they have an insufficient love for the truth. And God is the one who sends it to them, the blindness, because he hates it when we deliberately push away the truth and don't love it. And there's quite an obligation when you love the truth. Those who are truth lovers understand that you may not turn out to be the wealthiest or the most popular person, but you're doing what God put you on this earth to do. And when you refuse that, then you get saddled with Bush. Bush is the president that we deserve based on the degenerated state of the American people today. The rehabilitation of this country starts with the spiritual renewal of each one of us, that each one of us pledges We will never steal anything again in our lives, not even a penny. We will never tell a lie. If somebody calls us up at home and we don't want to talk to them, we're going to have to tell our children, hey, kids, tell them I can't talk right now. We're not even going to lie at that level. And when we build ourselves up from that, to the longshoremen on the West Coast that refuse to load those ships because they're tired of this murder and this genocide in the name of the American people, on up, then we've got a movement. But we have to move beyond simply infotainment and simply gathering all of this thrilling information, because that can inculcate morbidity in us, and that in itself is a form of passivity that the cryptocracy can use.
I agree with you to a certain extent, for those that are doing nothing but, you know, getting into his infotainment. But I think most people, it's an explosive growth and awakening, and I have a more positive, I mean, view overall. It should, we need to take action with the knowledge we have. I think it's what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Listen, we got to rampage through these calls quickly. We're going to talk right now to Eric in Philadelphia. Go ahead. You're on the air. Eric, thanks for holding. Turn the phone up. It's always good. No, I have the phone.
How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I'm here.
Yeah, you can go ahead and talk now, sir.
All right. Amazing show, you guys are talking about the Luciferian effect.
Your phone's really bad. I don't know why it's doing that. Just try to make your point quickly.
Hold on, I'll fix it.
Oh, he's on a voice changer. Oh, man.
All right, no, I'm not on a voice changer. You guys are talking about the
Luciferian. I'm going to have to let you go. I'm sorry, sir. I just can't do it. I don't know if it's our phone system or what, but we'll find out here in a minute. And you can call back and see if your line's better, sir. Who's up next? Josh in Florida, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
It's us.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead and try now.
Hello?
I may have fixed it. I may have accidentally hit a button. The other guy can call back. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Great show today. Tex Mars and Mr. Hoffman. Quick question. Mr. Hoffman, how do you feel about the correlation of the Book of Enoch, Genesis chapter 5, the Epic of Gilgamesh, and the story with Noah, and the Sumerian tablets?
Well, there's an attempt, and I don't want to stigmatize it as necessarily New Age, but certainly out of these Da Vinci Code genre of books, to attack
the credibility of the Bible and to bring new texts.
And also to associate it with the eternal pagan psychodrama. And if there's one thing the Old Testament is not, and what makes it unique, is it stands apart and separate from that eternal pagan psychodrama. You can see all the hallmarks of that paganism in Judaism, where, for example, they believe in reincarnation, and true Israelites, true Christians do not. They believe in magic and superstition. True Israelites and true Christians do not. As far as the Epic of Gilgamesh goes, you can see parallels between Gilgamesh. You can see certain parallels because there, for example, the deluge. The deluge exists in many cultures because they're witnesses to a fact that actually happened. But it doesn't mean that there is that the Bible grows out of that type of paganism. Of course, I'm not an Old Testament scholar here. My specialty is Judaism, Talmud, Kabbalah, and secret societies. There are probably other people.
Okay, let me get a comment from the caller.
Better than I.
Yeah, we got to move on. We'll be here all day. Does that answer your question, Josh?
Yeah, and just the Anunnaki and the Nephilim in Genesis chapter 5. Any comment on that would be great. I'll take that off there.
Sure. The Nephilim is really what brought the flood down on us because of the practices that were going on. We're seeing a lot of these practices today. These bestial practices. The evolutionists say that we were apes and we're headed towards this higher state. I say that we began in a state of humanity, and the cryptocracy is bestializing us down
to
the level.
Well, let's be clear. Apes don't do what humans do.
Yeah. We don't even, that's right. We've sunk beneath them. And so we can see parallels with the people, these depraved people in Genesis. We can see those parallels today in the modern world.
Yeah, it looks like genetic engineering to me from what it says. Okay, let's go ahead and talk to Eric in Philly. You're on the air. Sorry about the phone problem.
Hey, not a problem, man. I think today is probably your best show, Alex.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Luciferians have been around for thousands of years, correct?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily use the word Lucifer, but because that means light bearer, and you can get in. But I would say that Satanists have been, yes, and they use the name Lucifer sometimes, yes.
Well, Lucifer, I mean, like, you see a lot of things that have to do with light, like the Statue of Liberty's torch, and
yeah, that's a man in drag. No, I mean, it really is. That French admit that. That's a You want to explain that to him, Mike, how it's a Masonic garbed man?
Well, I'm going to take his question, and then we'll see what he has to say from there. Go ahead, sir.
Okay.
I think
you guys were talking about the Zionist disinfo that's going around.
Yes.
I had a guy tell me that Dylan Avery is a Zionist conspirator because he didn't have the dancing Israelis in his 9/11 movie. And that's the kind of stuff that goes around.
Well, yeah, I mean that's like an inquisitor. It's like they're the thought police. Everyone must say exactly and only on one subject, and my show's got to be 24 hours a day, only that. No, this is a syndicated radio show. We're covering everything. Dylan Avery, by the way, I'm looking at Jason Burmes out the window. He's out there making a film that a large portion of it is about that right now.
Why don't you ask him what he has to say about it? I'd really like that because,
he's out there editing the film. Okay, look, I appreciate your call. You see, I'm here with Michael talking about all this. I just had Tex Mars on. I had another guest on earlier this week talking about this. I've always had guests on talking about this. But once the sacrament that Alex Jones is bad and doesn't talk about these issues is set, people can't ever go back and say that they were wrong, that I'm not a Likudnik or something, okay?
It's part of the morbidity, Alex, of these people.
It's just dark hatred and cussing at people.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They need to get out of their house, away from their computer, you know, read a book, say some prayers, and get out into the real world. I know that I was part of a 9/11 session last summer, I believe that the 9/11 attacks are a hoax, but I find that there are these inquisitors or people who have set themselves up as the popes of the 9/11 conspiracy, and if I deviate 1% from their line of thought, then I'm as bad as Bush or Cheney.
Well, exactly, and then we all just factionalize, and you know, my whole issue here is you're a sharp guy, Michael Hoffman. You know, I didn't do any pre-interview with you. I didn't say what you could talk about. We take real phone calls. These guys go on the web and say, my guests are fake, my calls are fake, it's all fake. But then they call into the show, and I'm not even mad at that guy. But here, hell, let's inquisit. I just won't get home to see my wife. Hey, come on in here, Burmish. You don't know what I'm talking about, but come on in here. Or maybe you were. You better not be listening to the show. You're supposed to be out there working, getting that film done. Okay, now you're making a film exposing the Israeli connection, a big part of it, big risk to you, you know, big cojones. You're going to be demonized. You're the evil Zionist who has now been ordered to do this so you don't blow your cover. I mean, that's how it's going to see. See, we can't even then expose it. We have to be bad.
I'm sure that's exactly how they're going to play it out, is that, oh, my God, he is exposing it, but it's 7 years later. Listen, I've talked about this on my radio show dozens of times. I talk about it in talks.
What are you doing listening to the show? They're supposed to be working.
I am working, but you just pointed at me, Alex.
So you knew what I was saying when I just said it.
Yeah, because I was, the feed's going live out there too, so we heard that. But yeah, basically, you know, I live with Dylan. I don't live with Dylan anymore, but I lived with Dylan for about 2 years. We're well aware of the Israeli involvement.
See, this is a petty power trip. By answering the inquisitor, then it's more inquisiting. And then, see, they have these people that just sit up there questioning. Like, I don't question everyone. Where are you from, Hoffman? Who's paying you to do this, Hoffman? Who's paying you, Burmese? I mean, I know that the globalists aren't all-powerful. They put out propaganda from big outlets, and then they have their minions regurgitated who don't even know they're part of the program. That's why their symbol's the pyramid. They're not all-powerful. They don't control everybody. And I tell folks, instead of thinking I'm an agent all day, go out and wake somebody up. Go get involved. Go to a rally. Yeah, go figure out a boycott, like Mr. Hoffman said. But just submit to the guy, show him he has power. Why didn't you guys put the Israelis in there?
Because it's a 2-hour and 9-minute movie, Alex. We could barely put in the $100,000 wire transfer from the ISI.
Well, let's be honest, it's an area we can't absolutely, you know, connect all the dots on. And the scum that says it's the Jews run it all is so horrible and virulent, attacking people, you know, that you don't want to be associated with them. Hoffman, are you getting the point we're making here?
Well, sure, because I ran into it at that 9/11 meeting last summer, and it was a good one run by Bruce Lichty, a California attorney and a very fine man in my experience. And what I found was it was so absurd that there was a professor from the Berkeley area there, a very knowledgeable man, and he was talking about this heresy hunting that's going on inside the 9/11 movement, which of course there's a hidden hand behind it because it can destroy us with all the distrust and suspicion that's going on. But what I found was hilarious was one of the 9/11 activists would not come to the meeting because I was there, because he said that Hoffman doesn't believe that Judaics, that there were homicidal gas chambers in Auschwitz. So he's just beyond the pale, and I can't meet with him.
But again, this is about...
I thought to myself, yeah. But people told me not to go to the meeting because there were 9/11 deniers there, and they're beyond the pale. If we can't have goodwill for each other, if we can't have freedom of speech and freedom of inquiry and not automatically assume that the other guy is an agent or a spy or evil just because he dissents from us, we're not going to make it.
Yeah, that is the ether in which these people swim. Instead of that caller calling in and commending me for having the substantive courage to talk about these issues on air, which could also then restrict how many people we can reach later to get the main message out, you have to weigh all that. Instead of saying, great job, it's no, you have covered up. And so now I'm like, God, these people are scum. Do I even want to, you know, maybe they're completely wrong about things. You see, But I guess that's really it. I mean, I guess I do have a classical education, not that I'm smart, but I know I've seen how humans have worked before, and so I tend to know the patterns, and I don't think a lot of these people really have lived that much. I mean, maybe I'm not saying I'm different, but I just don't understand it. I mean, there's no discernment either.
Well, a lot of these people are crippled in mind, body, and soul. They use this movement for whatever their own psychological hang-ups and problems are. You know, when you go to a left-wing meeting, when you meet with Norman Finkelstein, and he's an independent Judaic, and I disagree with some of his things, but I admire his courage greatly, and boy, when he talks about the Middle East or Palestine, he gave a speech recently at MIT in Massachusetts that I saw. A lot of the Arab people were there, disagreed with him. It was all polite. It was courteous. He did a wonderful thing. He spoke for about an hour, and he said, you know, I'm going to take questions now, and since you all sat respectfully and heard me, I'm now going to give you the opportunity to ask me a question, and I want the first questions to go to those who disagree with me the strongest. Now, there was goodwill. He didn't fear his opposition the way rabbis do. He offered to his worst enemies in the audience an opportunity to go after him, and we don't see that largesse so much.
Well,
in
by the way,
I do that
on my show. I said disagreeers go to the head of the line. But my whole point is, instead of it being about this process of fighting with each other, can't we just move on and have our topics be about info? See, I think half our movement, you're worried about morbidity and doing nothing. More of it is, it's not that so much as it is ninnying and fighting about who's got all the correct answers instead of doing core research. I mean, my gosh, if you listen to my show for a week, it's just so many views, ideas, but a general picture comes in, and it's so many angles, and it increases your thought, and you know, where that's why we make the so much news, is because on the internet, is because we interview everybody, and that's what it's about. But you will never be forgiven, Burmese. I want everybody to know you're a scum. And you've been covering up, and how dare you make this film about Israeli involvement in 9/11? You are filth.
Yeah, you know,
and you'll get attacked by the ADL and by the Aryan Nation.
Absolutely, and you know, I just want to let everybody out there. Not only are we going to cover the dancing Israelis, we're going to cover the ones that were caught at the George Washington Bridge. We're going to cover Amdocs. We're going to cover Comverse. We're going to show how this is part of an international spy ring. Sibel Edmonds, when she told her story to the Times Online, she discussed, hey, there were Turkish moles, there was Israeli moles, and there was a Pakistani operation going through too. And Mahmoud Ahmed was the one that headed that up. See, there's different operational arms in 9/11. You had the Israelis who were more on the ground to, you know, tape the event, possibly let off some of the explosives. Then you had the Pakistanis out there as a cover for funding the hijackers, creating the trail.
Who were the patsies?
Yeah, creating the patsies. And the Turks are probably working hand-in-hand with both the Israelis and the Pakistanis to give coverage to the people inside our own government.
Yeah, but see, to say that there were different governments involved doesn't give cover to Israel, but people will claim that. Mm-hmm. No, it's like we're saying three guys robbed the bank. They're all three just as guilty. And they're like, no! It's like when I say LBJ, because the admirals that were there and the captains and everybody, you know, they told me we believe LBJ was involved. It was all set up with Israel. That makes Israel more guilty, mm-hmm. and LBJ more guilty. It doesn't give them cover. You see, again, it's... it's these people. That's why Christian religions break into thousands of pieces, because a new preacher wants to attack the old preacher to go set up his new group and make it about how it's jealousy of this radio show is the main thing.
And
but hold on, we spent enough time on this distraction.
Yeah.
Now no one else gets to talk and talk to guests because that person called in with that, and then we have to defend this. But Burmese, we're going to have you filling in next Friday when I'm out of town. Thanks for coming in with us. You're evil and bad.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Get out of here, you evil cover-up person. Take care.
I just want to say, Alex, that they pushed the idea that knowledge is power. DARPA's slogan was Scientia Est Potentia. I don't believe that knowledge is power. I believe that power lies in the ability to detect fraud. And that's something that you can really only learn through a lifetime of careful study, and you need teachers. It isn't simply a flood of knowledge and information, but it's the ability to detect fraud.
Well, I mean, the people perish for lack of knowledge, though.
Well, yes, that's true. That's one component of it, but I think there's a lot of folks that believe that knowledge itself is a palliative, and once you have this knowledge, but what happens is so many people have all these competing theories that folks expose themselves to an alternative, but if they don't have the ability to detect fraud, they end up more confused than even the regular man on the street. I'm not saying that you're wrong for having a program where you allow competing points of view. I think that that's excellent because, as I said, there's a boycott against our work, and you're one of the few that has afforded us a national platform, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, but see, there's a boycott against you because you're actually being reasonable and trying to point at facts. That's what the establishment doesn't like. They want a bunch of idiots, and again, we've just never been afforded the credit that we've always covered this. It's just that we haven't done it in a frothing, mindless, peon level, you know, way of doing things. And our job is to get people thinking and to make no group feel bad, to make no group feel like we hate them, because we don't want to empower those groups by making them feel like they've been persecuted, because then they empower their corrupt masters.
Precisely.
I mean, if I come out and say I don't like black
people, we want to do some counterintelligence where they come over to us. So many times we have had the cryptocracy infiltrate our ranks. How about us infiltrating their ranks by getting people of goodwill to understand we don't hate them, we want to lift burdens off their shoulders, and let's all work for the truth together.
Okay, let's go to another call. Hear how I'm bad. And screen calls, even though they can call right in. Let's go to Will in Philly. I'm just joking. Go ahead, Will.
For people out there not aware, make no mistake, there's a multi-million-dollar campaign out there to balkanize the truth movement, and Alex, a large chunk of it spent on you. I'm sure you know this.
Oh, my God. It's incredible. It's unbelievable.
I commend you, man. When you started getting nuts about the murder, the Mossad murder torture of Riyad Ahmed, I just knew. I said to my friend, I said, he's going to get death threats. If you continue to expose Zionism for the wretched ideology, and that's the operative word, it's not a religion, that it is, you're going to start feeling the heat, brother, and I just want you to take precautions. You can go online and you can see true Torah Jews against Zionism getting spat on by Zionist apologists and blind followers. And Herzl, Theodore Herzl, the founder of modern Zionism, talked about how useful anti-Semitism could be. He said something to the effect that it is essential that the sufferings of Jews become worse.
No, yeah, that's an exact quote. No.
Yes, and...
Well, see, I mean, that's like the ADL endorsing Schwarzenegger, who's a Nazi gay porn guy.
Praises Hitler.
That's okay, but then if you're for free speech, you're Hitler now. See, but our own movement's calling for speech control. Our own movement's calling for only having balkanization. See, no, I am for the Bill of Rights. I am for the Constitution. I appreciate your call. Great caller. Go ahead, Will.
No. Please.
I never get home. I was going to be 6, 10 hours. 50
you said
hours.
A minute, brother. Mr. Hoffman, I just want to thank you. Thank you. You're probably the most insightful guest this month. Anthony Hilder has a Catholic connection. I have his number if you want. You can put this Jesuit nonsense to bed.
Well, no, I've had Anthony Hilder on many times. There's no putting it to bed. All these groups want to balkanize us and fight over who runs different heads of the Hydra instead of just going, we've got an evil world government with a bunch of occultists running, and I appreciate your call. I got to go. Listen, I got to let you go, and I'll be called a censor for that. Probably not by him, but by somebody else. I got to move on. We're almost past 6 hours here. Let's go ahead and take a call from Kyle in Connecticut. Kyle, go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Thanks for stepping it up and going the extra mile. I just have a question for, I'm sick of these Reptoid, Anunnaki, Nibiru people that are on your site. I'm just, how do you deal with them?
Well, I can't censor them. I only censor people that call for violence and then report me for the violence they post on my comments. And we can make a registration tomorrow, but I tried to, like, let people have First Amendment, and of course the moles come in, and then we kick people off who put links to porn, and they say we're censoring, and, you know, again, it shouldn't be about me, folks. This is the mental illness they've ingrained in us to only be able to talk about each other. We're doing it right now, and then you try to fix it, but the more you talk about them, the worse it gets. You notice for 2 hours with Hoffman, I talked about issues, and now we go to calls, and we can see I'm not attacking you, but that's one reason my show's been successful, is I've always shut this stuff down. And I've even shut down defending me, because I don't care. Hoffman, you got any comments?
Well, I wanted to mention our website, revisionisthistory.org, and I'm not quite certain. I know you're talking about some kind of smog that hits your website and everything, and that's certainly endemic to our movement. The previous caller had mentioned the so-called Torah true Judaics who have received a lot of flack for going over to Iran and participating in the revisionist conference. But you have to understand that these are traditional followers of the Talmud, and the fact that they do these things does raise the prestige of the Talmud, and it doesn't change the nature, the Babylonian nature of the Talmud. So we have to be aware and weigh in the balance whether this is a Trojan horse or not.
Okay, let's go ahead now and talk to Todd in North Carolina. Todd, you're on the air.
Hey, Alex. I enjoyed the show today. I had a question. I've been following several different streams of information, including your show. One of the people out there, his name's Joel Rosenberg. I don't know if you've heard of him. He wrote a book called Epicenter, and he is a Russian Jew who's a converted Jew, if that's what you want to call it. He's worked for Rush Limbaugh and Forbes magazine.
Okay, what's he saying?
Well, basically, his book, Epicenter, it talks about the Ezekiel 38 and 39, the War of Gog and Magog, and how Russia and Iran would have this alliance against Israel.
Oh, yeah, I think I've actually heard him. That's one of the guys I've heard on the show saying, we're about to have nuclear war, the Messiah is going to come, and he goes around all the Christian churches. Just getting him.
Yeah, he's on Glenn Beck, and he's been on Dobson and everything.
I've heard
Is that some sort of misdirection like you all were talking about?
What do you mean misdirection? That's the takeover of the churches and making them believe they're going to make Jesus come by launching nuclear weapons. It's a cold-blooded secular manipulation of the Christians that have been going off of the new Bibles they printed in the last 100 years that preach all this made-up rapture stuff. I appreciate your call. Quickly on that subject, Mr. Hoffman.
Yeah, if Rabbi Rush Limbaugh is behind it, and I'm half kidding when I call him a rabbi, but he certainly behaves and like one. If Rabbi Rush Limbaugh is behind it, you can be sure that when it comes to the Zionists or the Israelis, that this fellow is not a true Christian convert. And I think you summed it up in a nutshell. They're always trying to use the apocalypse or apocalyptic theories and pipe dreams in order to identify some enemy of the Zionists as being God's enemy. And also calling the Zionist state Israel when it's counterfeit Israel is bankrupt right from the premise.
Oh, man, it's all going to end in nuclear war. Let's go ahead and take it. And then all the neocons will be happy, I guess, and all the liberals and everybody else, conservatives, too. Carl in Oklahoma, we got to end this soon, folks. I got to get home. Go ahead, Carl.
Hello, Alex and Michael.
Hi.
Please bear with me for a minute. I was born with 6 fingers on each hand. I'm the second child of my mother, Bethel. I am Elijah the Antichrist.
I appreciate your call, man. I can't do this. I can't do it. I can't do it anymore. I just can't. I mean, look, it's what they've done to everybody. We start taking the calls, and it's just insane asylum. But I still have you on, folks, because it's what you need, and a lot of you are great. And there's a lot of delusions of grandeur across society, and I'm seeing it get worse. People kind of take on an imaginary mantle. It's like adults playing like they're 3-year-olds with imaginary friends, and I just can't handle it. What about you?
Yeah, I guess it's like the old joke about the insane asylum where the guy thinks he's Napoleon.
Man, I'm seeing a lot of it. It's just insane. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Sorry, Elijah. And now he'll think, they know I am the secret one. Alex is of the devil goblin. I will get him or something. I mean, you know, it's just... David in Texas, go ahead.
How y'all doing? Great show as usual. I thank you, Alex, for all your efforts in the Patriot movement that you've been at through all these years. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Let me ask that question to Hoffman, but I want his real comment. And believe me, I'll have you back on sometime, even if you say I'm the worst creature on earth. I want your real answer. I take you as a smart, intelligent guy with a lot of discernment. What do you think of Alex Jones? I mean, have I not brought in a million loads of fruit, good fruit, energizing, waking up millions?
Are you asking me? Because I agree with you.
No, I'm asking Mr. Hoffman. I want his take, and I'll go back
to
you.
Well, Alex, to be candid with you, I didn't know much about you until you invited me on the program. I knew you had a important program because there were people who were telling me that he's very good on 9/11, and he's very good on this prison planet idea that what they're putting us through. Mainly, I'd heard that you had said that what they're putting us through at the airports, they intend to expand from those airports out onto the streets.
Yeah, they're training us, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not bragging, but I am kind of the big shot. But obviously not that big. You didn't know who I was. But my point is, just analyzing me then as a guy, you know, right off the turnip truck. I'm off the turnip truck. What do you think of
me? Well, I just wanted to say that other people came on, maybe some of the flack that you get as well, and they told me, oh, he's a Zionist poodle. He never covers the Zionist issue, and he'll never have you on. And even after I was on the first show, I got some emails along those lines, and my reply was, well, if he's a Zionist poodle, why did he have me on the program and give me an opportunity to speak my mind? Now you've done that for a second time.
Yeah, but see, that's how this works, though. I had guests on 10 years ago about this. I mean, that's my point, is that it's too important that I be the bad man. Like if I see evidence to the contrary to something, I'll admit I was wrong. They won't do that. But that's
just I'd like to ask my supporters to write letters to GCN Network and thank them for having the Alex Jones program on the air, and I hope that the people who read my books and listen to my tapes will patronize your advertisers if it's something that they feel is good or useful for them. And I don't know, you know, I'd have to sit down and have a glass of beer with you to find out if we're on the same page on everything, but what I admire is the fact, and what I've gotten from you, and I'm sure you haven't tried to deceive me, if this is the real Alex Jones that I've been dealing with over these last two programs, you have a love of the First Amendment, you have a love of freedom of expression, and you have a love of people like me who are, I'm a very marginal person, and I have a small audience, and yet I think that some of the information and research that God has made accessible to me is extraordinarily important for the survival of our nation.
Well, exactly. That's why you're here, because I think, well, the way you put it, I know you're genuine. I have discernment. And I think a lot of people are blinded. They don't have it. And I've helped so many other people try to get their word out, and then they flip out. And I think they're in it for the wrong reasons. This is life and death. And again, it isn't that I don't really mind being attacked. What I don't like is I know people are wasting their time because I know they're blind if they're attacking me. I mean, I'm just trying to be friendly and be nice to everybody, and at the same time get people thinking. I interrupted you, caller. Finish what you're saying.
Oh, that's no problem, Alex. Very quickly, it's the way I see it. First of all, I appreciate what you're doing. I generally agree with what you're doing, and I certainly don't. There's a couple of things I take a slightly different opinion on, but I don't hold anything against
you. Well, I change some of my views, not my core values, but I change views month to month, year to year. I mean, we all grow, we all change,
exactly.
we all have experiences. We all saw the Israelis run that armored vehicle over that woman and laugh about it, American citizen. You know, we all saw Bush say, if I was a dictator, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. You know, there's a process here. And that's why we have plenty of evil people we know are bad. But we need to, again, be a little more genteel about everything, and myself included. But any comments or questions, sir, I really got
to
go.
Oh, very quickly, I would say the movement, everyone needs to get together. It's about the country, our future, stopping world government conspiracy.
But everybody get together, though, it means everybody has to agree.
It's not about any single person. It's not about egos getting out of hand. People need to be more humble and Christian anyways, and it's about God, not about any one of us individually. And I appreciate what you do, Alex, and I wouldn't be the kind of person who might say, go out and stab you in the back, think they're going to eclipse your efforts. That's ridiculous. No one's going to eclipse your efforts. You've done a great
job. I want people to eclipse me. I appreciate your call. I have people that I try to trust do the show and fill in and build them up, and then they do the most horrible stuff you can imagine years ago. I mean, you know, that's what I mean. I don't want to be the main attack frigate going in at point-blank range against the New World Order. I don't like to, you know, give them every tool to come back and attack me.
Well, if they're turning on you, then I'd have to say, where is the Christianity? Because Jesus said to love your enemies, to bless them that curse you. And
A lot of these people openly in the movement don't even profess to be Christian. So.
Well, that's unfortunate then, because I think the Christians have to take the leadership, but they have to be authentic Christians and not Christians in name only. And I certainly want to testify that I love the Talmudists, and you know, I ask God to reform them. I certainly don't hate them. I hate the sins that are committed, and I hate the crimes that are committed. And as I said earlier, the Apostle Paul said, the ruler bears not the sword in vain. I'm in favor of capital punishment, as the old-time Christians were.
Well, I mean, that's a larger issue. I don't hate people in Israel. I don't want them to die. I know most of the people there are ignorant, don't even know what they're part of, just like Americans aren't. That's my point, is it's evil groups at the top. And so, just like if I'm attacking Italian mafia, I'm not against Italians. You know,
right, but at the same time, the individual Israeli has got to be aware that they benefit from the colonialism and the oppression of the Arabs. And if you use the Allied World War II formula that allowed the terrible Holocaust against the German people, the German civilians in all the major cities, and that's justified to this day by all number of ideologues on the right.
But you also have justification by the colonialism that happened here in the U.S., and we talked about that 2 hours ago.
Yeah. No, I'm not for collective guilt, but they apply it to the Germans, and then they exculpate the Israelis.
Oh, I understand. That's why we're here discussing this. You know what? I just can't take anymore. We got to end this. Who's been holding the longest here? Ron in Ohio, I'm going to have to cut it off there. Go ahead.
Hey, how you both doing? I appreciate listening to both of you. I've been following Mr. Hoffman's website for quite a while and reading up on it. I am a Christian, but I am what would be concerned a preterist, which is demonized by most institutional sectarian
churches. Well, I mean, if God's kingdom's come to earth and everybody's happy and there's no more evil in the world or the devil's gone, I mean, in the Christian paradigm, that just is crazy. I mean, I'm not mad at you. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying you're going to hell. I don't get into these judging games, but I mean, the preterist thing has got to be even more ridiculous than the rapture crowd.
Well, it depends on who's preterist.
Look, I've studied the preterist stuff. I study all this stuff voraciously. Well, let's get Hoffman's comment on that.
Well, I'm just concerned basically about this eschatology that suggests that all prophecy or majority of prophecy is
happened in 70 AD by Titus.
Well, I believe a great deal of prophecy was fulfilled in 70 AD, but I believe there are also unfulfilled prophecy. But I think that it becomes a dead end for us if Christians who have goodwill, there's so few of us in this movement who are united on the big issues. And then we start tearing each other apart because one man is a preterist and another man is something else. I mean, I'm not really privy to the theological minutiae here. I read the Bible, and I don't really do this theological hair splitting, which I think is almost a curse on Protestantism with the factionalism and the subsects and the disunity. It's certainly fine if somebody has a theory about prophecy, but I hope that it will not become something that interferes with salvation.
I hear you, and I appreciate your call. I hear you, and I appreciate your call, Ron. I mean, that's my thing. You know, I had family, the Ayers family and others, you know, that raised Colonel Travis's son. You know, it's in the movie The Alamo, him dropping his kids off. It's my mom's side of the family. I mean, my whole family, you know, involved in the Revolutionary War for this state, and on both sides. And Ayers came here. He was a Protestant activist in New York. He sold the land that the UN's on today. He was wealthy. Bought an entire ship full of Bibles, which was expensive, most of his money. And he came into Texas. The Catholics were going to kill him in Galveston. And you know, the priest came after him. This is when Mexico ran it, because he'd heard Protestants were being persecuted. He had to convert to Catholicism, at least on paper. In fact, then on my dad's side, we have Mexican land grants that even say that. But, you know, nobody really followed it. You know, to get the grant, you just sign your name. And then they came up to Nacogdoches, And then, of course, we're involved in the Revolutionary War here, starting all that. And I'm not Catholic, but I don't hate Catholics individually. I mean, I think it's New World Order. Obviously, the Pope calls for it. But I don't want to get in a fight over that. So I say, yeah, the Pope's New World Order. Yeah, that's not what I'm into. Yeah, you know, my family, you can go check it. You know, the Hammonds, the Joneses, all of them Protestant. I mean, Texas is Protestant. And then they just say I'm a Vatican assassin. But the guy saying it says the Earth is on a string floating and the universe orbits it, and that flying saucers that Germans have magnetic beams on Rosicrucian lines that zap people. I mean, and they're like, you will interview this great genius, and the person's a complete quack nut idiot, you know, and I will not be part of it. And I'm tired of these dumb inquisitors saying I'm a Catholic New World Order operative, which I have frankly found is a bunch of propaganda out of the Israel First crowd, and these idiots don't even know they're being handled by it.
I think that so many people, Alex, who call themselves Christians or not, I mean, just the spirit you're describing of ill will and resentment, I mean, the true Christian has a gentle spirit, a spirit of reconciliation. A lot of people on the left who would call themselves atheists or who we might deride as liberals, I have seen kindness and gentleness. I was telling you about the reception that Finkelstein got at MIT. Everyone was courteous, but he was challenged in the questions, and it was just a wonderful exchange.
I agree. Some of the liberals really are nice people. I mean, they've been manipulated and conned, but no, I agree.
And their movement, a lot, you know, people get into the left because they hear that it's for love and brotherhood and helping people. A lot of people get into the right because they hear it's a way of preserving their coin collection and going to war. You know, we have to be careful because the right wing and the left wing are two wings of a predatory Kabbalistic bird. In Kabbalism, you have the pillar of mercy and the pillar of severity representing the right and the left. And it's a means of
well, that's why they say it was Masonic with the two towers. You want to, in closing, all the numbers, the numerology, the 911, the number you get when you call the government, 911 in the occult, all of it.
Yeah, we did a special issue of our Revisionist History newsletter on the occult aspects of 9/11. In fact, Tex Mars borrowed the image that we used there from the tarot card, and you've probably seen it in Texas literature. We were the first to use it, and that was of the flaming tower with the people jumping off the tower, an exact recreation of a alchemical archetype. And I wouldn't be able to do justice to our research on that, but if folks go to our website, we have the online store with the revisionist issues there. And we
so that murder was a massive ritual. I mean, it was done like that, and they do a lot of other killings like that.
The year 2001 was predicted. Again, we're going back to Arthur C. Clarke, and it's kind of interesting how you and I have focused on that, because I mentioned it in passing, and you actually brought me back to it. But
yeah, dawn of the new age. It's the start of evolution. Everything changes after 2001. Our lives will never be the same.
Yeah, if you may recall that on New Year's Day of 2001, the obelisk from the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, appeared in Seattle, and no one knew where it came from, and then it just as mysteriously disappeared. That was whether it was accidental, coincidental, synchronistic, it was certainly, from the point of view of symbolism, a very timely event to have that at the dawn of 2001, the 21 era, which both John Dee and Arthur C. Clarke forecast that 2001 was going to be a gateway into a completely different era. But as you mentioned earlier, Alex, and it's important to emphasize it, these people are not all powerful. They're very confident. They've been virtuoso in the execution of their conspiracy, because we ourselves have been weak. We have been faithless. We haven't done what God has wanted us to do. But if we ever do have the grace and fulfill the will and reason that God put us on this planet, then they can be defeated. It may not be a total defeat, but it can be a way of making this world a better place for our children, and that's what we need to do. And we've seen their fallibility in Vietnam, and we're seeing it in Iraq as well, where they stumbled in there and didn't even have a plan for the occupation. Feist and the other neocons were treating the Iraqis, the members of the Ba'ath Party, as if they were members of the Nazi Party. They were practically recreating the occupation orders that were created in 1945, completely irrelevant to the situation in Iraq. You've got a lot of dumb people at the top, and you also have some brilliant wizard types. But certainly God can conquer all of these if we will only allow him to use us as he wants us to be used.
And I mean, not fight the New World Order because we hate them. Fight them because we, you know, they're evil and they have to be defeated, and we have to protect the good people. And their minions, you know, don't hate them because the globalists use our hatred of them to scare them under the dark bosom, under the black wings of the New World Order. Well, Michael Hoffman, thank you for spending time with us, and it's been an interesting discussion. I hope it stirs people to think and to reflect on the different things that you've talked about. I know after 5 hours and 10 minutes, I am exhausted, so I'm out of here until this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we'll have you back up in the near future, and I appreciate your time and research.
Revisionisthistory.org. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. All right, folks, I am out of time. We'll hit the outro music. I've got a headache. I can't do more than 4 hours. I mean, it is just, I had fun, though. Great guests. Ended up being almost for 3 hours. And to everybody out there, start waking somebody up. Start warning somebody. Stop taking their vaccines. It's like he said, boycotting them, not unloading the ships. Don't take their vaccines. Don't drink their fluoride water. Take control. Stop using their cell phones that fry your brain. Stop living by cell phone towers. Take your kids out of public school. Start bad-mouthing the New World Order. Educate people. Stand up to them. And support those that tell the truth. Go get our books and videos. Get them out to people. Infowars.com. God bless you all. Retransmission starts right now at Infowars.com. Go to the stream. Have an incredible show today. Infowars.com. Right now, the streams will just meet the show where it was in retransmission. Take care.